It's time for Mac Break Weekly as we wait on tenterhooks for Apple's Q1 earnings call. We'll talk a little bit about what to be looking for, what information would be useful, what would be good, what would be bad. I think it's going to be pretty good for Apple. We'll also warn you about a website that's guaranteed to crash your Safari. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 491, recorded Tuesday, January 26th, 2016. Paul Pot Pinball. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet easy-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit Drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. And by LegalZoom. Get your life organized today with an estate plan bundle at LegalZoom.com. Whether you need a will or a trust, since they're not a law firm, you work with an independent attorney available in most states to find the plan that fits best for your needs. Enter MBW in the referral box at checkout for $10 off. That's LegalZoom.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news, and there will be big news today after the show. So, should we just wait? Let's just sit here.
We'll just sit here. Have some coffee.
I think we should just say reckless and irresponsible things that are simply speculative because we don't know what the truth is going to be.
We got no
news.
It's
our last opportunity to pull things out of our butt.
That's Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times. That's how a real reporter works. Andy is also the, I don't know, what else? You're so many things. The purveyor of fine blog posts at CWOB.com. And he does other podcasts, including Iannocco's Almanac and...
God bless the people who are silly enough to pay me to express my opinions in both writing and audio form.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that a nice thing when you're?
Hey, if I keep the scam going for another 30 years.
I know. You know how I feel here. I've been. I feel like any minute
pretty
now.
Pretty sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sweet, God. but any minute now they're going to find out. Also here, Rene Ritchie. He's no longer in Winnipeg. He has now moved his operations to South Beach.
South Bay. I'm beneath you, Leo.
South Bay. You mean like San Jose? Oh, you're like near the fruit company.
Yeah, and I was hoping to make it up to the Brick House, but I couldn't get there in enough time. It was very sad.
Whereas Merlin Mann calls it the paper company. So you're not you actually thought it would be a good idea for the quarterly earnings report to be in Cupertino?
No, it was completely coincidental I had actually forgotten that it was this week.
All right. Well, we know you have to.
I'll be back in sunny Winnipeg in 2 weeks. Oh, if that makes everyone feel better.
Nice. Nice. Also here, Alex Lindsay.
Hello, hello.
Nice to see you, Alex.
Good to be here.
From the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com. Apple, the reason there will be news is the quarterly earnings come out today. This is Q1 for Apple. Historically, not a big quarter, right?
No, this is the fall quarter.
This is the big one.
This is the one that reflects the holiday sales. Okay. What are we looking for?
Billions.
It turns out they probably made a couple $1 billion, at least. That's what we hear. A couple billion.
I mean, the sad thing is that they're going to make record money. They'll probably make the biggest quarter ever, but all everyone's going to pay attention to is the presumed shrinkage in the second quarter.
Well, and the interesting thing is that when we say they're going to make more money, that doesn't mean the most ever for Apple. I think that's the most ever for anyone, right?
Yeah, but Wall Street doesn't care about today. They want to know what's happening tomorrow. And tomorrow, I mean, the bigger the iPhone gets, the bigger it has to fall.
Right.
And that's, you know,
so the guidance is the big thing, like what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. What should we be looking for, Renee?
So the interesting thing now is that people are presuming that there's a lot of economic pressure in general. The global markets are down. China specifically is down. And the iPhone, every quarter, people think that iPhone is going to hit saturation, that there's just nowhere left for it to go. There's not enough upgraders, not enough cross-graders, not enough new customers. It's going to get to a point where everyone who has an iPhone wants one. And then inevitably, that's going to stall. And the problem is that Wall Street keeps looking at Apple as a company that needs to grow more. They look at it like almost like a widget vendor. They don't look at it like a services company, and they don't look at it like an established company like Coca-Cola or Gillette, because you know razor blades have been around forever. Soda pop has been around forever. So for me, it's mostly a perceptions problem.
Well, but I think that for Wall Street, when you're not looking at, when you're investing in a company, you're not looking at where they are right now. What you're looking at is how much more are they going to keep on growing? How much is my stock going to go up when I put money into it? And if I don't think that it's going to keep on going up, it doesn't matter whether it could still make $1 trillion a year. It doesn't matter. If it's not growing, it means the stock is not going to necessarily go up. So unless it's going to give me back dividends, which Apple has done a little bit, which I think is a waste of money, then the stock is going to start, you know, people are going to start stepping away from it just because it's not a good investment. It's not growing and it's not producing anything, any kind of return for the investors' money.
That's absolutely true. But the problem Apple's historically had is that everyone assumed the next quarter was going to be destruction. Like this quarter was great, but next quarter, it's like being in Vegas and the guy next to you keeps winning. And you think that every time he wins, like the next chance is going to be even bigger chance that he's going to fail, even if he's really, really good at what he does. And Apple has the same chance every quarter. The law of large numbers, what goes must come down. There's a lot of stereotypes that get thrown around. But I think Wall Street's lost a huge opportunity on Apple for the last decade just by presuming doom and gloom every quarter.
And I think that, you know, at some point it has to slow down because they aren't really diversifying enough yet. I think that but you know, when we look at the watch or whatever, I think the watch is doing probably, I don't think we've seen numbers yet, but probably as well or better than the original iPhone did. I mean, you know, I think that or not, you know, not much behind it. So it's something that, you know, is that could evidently, I mean, eventually build up. I think that the stuff that with where they could go with Apple Pay, I think is pretty interesting. I think we looked at a couple things coming out, and I think that diversification could yield a lot down the road.
Yeah, I don't really care what the stock market thinks, because they have different interests than we do as
right.
Apple users
right,
and
right, right.
Apple followers. But I guess we have to pay attention to the stock market, because first of all, if it weren't for the stock market, we'd never get these quarterly reports,
right.
And we wouldn't get any information at all.
And when the stock goes down, it's a good opportunity for Apple to do buybacks, which I imagine we're going to see more buybacks over this quarter. They have a lot of cash at hand. They have that's the pressure they've gotten. You know, what I'm hoping is they don't waste time on dividends. They really just keep on doing buybacks, because I still think it puts Apple in a position that at some point in 5 or 6 years, you know, they've whittled down that the stock a lot.
Right.
So I think that would make more sense, you know, for that. And it's a good bargain right now, I think. Speaking
really?
Of someone who doesn't have, I think $100.
Price to earning is only $11. That's pretty low, isn't it? $10.88.
Yeah.
Price to earnings. That means the earnings are high. The stock price is relatively low.
Yeah, I think it's a good value right now. I mean, and that's speaking of someone who doesn't own any stocks.
Yeah.
No, I don't do stocks.
What would be, let me see. Yeah, I don't. I just do, you know, funds, which are baskets. And the larger the basket, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
What would be it? Let's see. Price to earning. Let's compare it to Ford. Ford would be a good one, which is F. Ford has a good letter. Its price to earnings is almost the same, $10.27.
Yeah, and if Apple
so
Apple
it's
becomes,
an old, it's kind of like
if they become a value company over line. A growth company, then that's the kind of ratio you'd expect.
Google is, or Alphabet is, $33.42.
Yeah,
so theoretically, times what Apple is.
Theoretically, it's considered a growth company.
I wonder what Twitter is.
Apple's problem is that it's profitable. If you don't make a profit, you can hope that eventually the profit will be super huge. But if you make a profit, there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? It's kind of a no-win. Twitter doesn't even have a price to earning. I don't know what that means.
Oh, poor Twitter.
It says dash. What does that mean, dash?
You're screwed.
It's not a good day to look it up.
Does that mean negative?
It could be negative.
It can't be negative. Oh, yeah, it could be negative. I think it is negative. That means you're making less.
It's been rough.
If you have no earnings, then the price to earnings is negative.
That's not a...
I shouldn't laugh. That's not a good thing to laugh. I shouldn't laugh. But again, all of this is stock market shenanigans. And, you know, we know that what the stock market is looking for different things than we're looking for. In fact, we are looking for a value company, a stable company with stable growth that will continue to put energy and make money, but and put energy into its products.
And I do think, though, I do think that Apple has to go past the phone at some point. I think that's what – I mean, I think that they've done a little bit. I mean, the computers are noise at this point. iPads are a little bit above noise as far as revenue
Maybe
goes.
Maybe you want to take a guess what Amazon's price to earnings is?
3 gazillion.
Just a guess.
52.
$867.23.
Holy smokes.
So that would be an overpriced stock. If you're,
I think so.
If you're, oh my goodness!
And they haven't. They never make any money.
It's got potential, Leo. It's well, got potential.
So that's a lot part of upside.
I think the reason it's so high is because they have a lot of gross, but and they never have any net. So it creates this really
that's
really
exactly
high.
Right.
You know,
they're very
it's
low
very
profit.
Unusual. Yeah, because they just keep on
but
reinvesting.
They control it. They just control it. They have a knob. There's a little knob in Jeff Bezos' office that just.
It says, let's not make any money. Let's keep
profits
money
down.
Yeah. So, but I think that, you know, I think that the, I think the car, I think that Apple's moving down. It could, you know, it's an entirely new industry to disrupt.
What are you going to be looking for, Renee? You're going to be looking for information about sales, right?
Well, mostly I'll focus on next. It's going to be interesting this quarter just to see the amount of stuff sold, but also what the ongoing, for example, how many people switched from Android again this quarter, how many new owners there are, App Store revenue, because that's been going on a consistent growth curve. What iPad, they're not going to break out Apple Watch, but Apple Watch is going to be clumped together with a bunch of other stuff. But it apparently has had a very good holiday quarter, so has the iPad. And then going into next quarter,
that's going to be interesting because iPad's been down every quarter after quarter for a couple of years. And so this one thing I would be looking for is the iPad Pro going to staunch the bleeding?
Well, also a lot of companies said that iPad was a big seller. I forget what it was in the top 10 for Best Buy, very close to the top of the top 10 list for Best Buy over the holidays.
Isn't that interesting?
And it is sort of like one of those seasonal purchases. People do get you a tablet for the holidays.
And maybe we now know what the product cycle is for a tablet. You know, maybe it's 4 years or something, you know.
Well, I know. It's such a different product. I don't think that that's going to be very relevant. Also, remember that a lot of the hardware was in really short supply when people were most eager to go out and grab it. So if the numbers are less than what we think assume they should be, I don't think that's going to be terribly significant.
And I think we could see explosive growth in the iPad if we saw things like the iPad mini with pencil. You know, I think, you know, going away from that whole, like, I just feel like my iPad is a completely different device, you know, with the pencil. And what I find is that the Pro is bigger than I want to carry around, but I still want to be able to draw stuff out. And I think that we could, you know, adding all those features back into the smaller iPads, I think could end up with a lot of people upgrading, you know, just taking jumping from one to the other.
Absolutely. Apple Pencil is to the iPad what Force Touch is to the iPhone. I mean, it will be nice to have Force Touch on the iPad, but there are more people who will buy an iPad to get Apple Pencil than there will be for people to get access to Force Touch on that device.
Just a note, we do know our website's down. We're working on it. I didn't pay the bill. $144.
I've been there.
It wasn't for the website. It was for the Redis Labs cash. But when that goes down, everything goes off, but no, live.twit.tv is working.
It's hard to keep track. That's why, like, I've got like payment for my domains like 10 years in advance.
Yeah, well, I would have done that. I had no idea it was tied to my personal credit card.
Exactly. It's almost running a site. It's almost like buying a house where it's like, okay, great. I've written the check for $378,000. Oh, wait, I need another person a check for $1,700. Oh, wait, and then this other person needs to get a check for $420. Yeah.
Site that is down right now, I'm just going to, this is sad, the abevagoda.com site is down. Abe Vigoda finally passed away. Sorry.
Yes, everybody like me is refreshing it just to see if they got updated.
They didn't. Has not been updated. I think Paul Kodrowski on my Twitter feed posted, you had one job, and he linked to the abevagoda.com site. And I went to it and said he's still alive. But unfortunately, the news is sad. But he lived a good life, 92 years old.
Yep.
It was an internet meme for a long time because people thought he was dead years ago, decades ago.
Right, assume.
and he's not. The great Abe Vigoda, who is not merely one of the stars of Barney Miller, the TV show, was, of course, in The Godfather and was brilliant in The Godfather. He did get killed in the first movie, though. So,
tell Mike he was nothing personal.
Yeah.
Always liked
him. Nothing personal. I always liked him. Here's a picture of him dancing in a wombat suit at a fish concert.
There's that.
At the age of 92. You know, for all the crap I give Twitter, where else are you going to see that?
Yeah, exactly.
The first place that you find out about these things is on Twitter, and that's also the first place you see people dancing in a wombat suit on a fish concert.
So. Yeah.
Back we go to the stock news in just a moment. I do want to say, was it you who told me about these pins? My pins came.
Someone online.
From Milk. Remember this? We said that these guys would be put out of business quickly, but I guess no. Tessio. That's it. He was Tessio.
Yeah. What's that?
Is that what you said? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't hear that.
Funny, I would expect that from Clemenza.
Clemenza, no. Yeah.
Tessio was always smarter. It's a smart.
So I got a... we had a great triangulation yesterday where we interviewed the fourth employee of Apple, Bill Fernandez, who was instrumental in building early model Apple IIs, left briefly in 1978. He was the guy who introduced Jobs and Woz. He had some great memories. Oh, I asked him if he'd seen the movie, and he said, no, I'm not going to see the movie. Steve was my best friend.
Right.
It's too painful for me to see a movie about Steve.
Right.
It says one more pin. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? You know, I got two, so... I'm going to give you one.
Aww, thank
and I'd
you.
Give you all one, but thank I don't you. I don't have four. I didn't bring enough for the whole class.
That was a good reason to come up here.
They probably already got the C&D, so.
Yeah, this might be a collector's item. Actually, we can continue. Have we said everything there is to say about the quarterly report? I don't want to belabor it. We'll know hour.
The only thing I would have wanted to add is that it's always interesting because I can't think of another situation in which you hear Apple telling their own story, but they're not in front of a crowd of 500 to 600 people, of whom 100 or 200 are Apple employees, and it's not real PR. It's where the stuff that they say in this venue, they will get sued if it's not open and accurate. And there's a chance for people to ask them direct questions and get direct answers immediately afterwards. So it's not as though you're rifling through Apple's desk drawers here, but it's always interesting to see what they say, what they don't say, and what they want to sort of lean towards as they go. I'm really curious to see if they say anything about iPad Pro sales. Really curious to see if they try to put a finer point on Apple Watch sales. But it's always a good time to pay close attention and to be very, very, very good at spinning to make sure that the things that you were saying about Apple for the past 3 months are actually proven by whatever numbers they are going to go and release today.
Also, I think very interesting that I would like to hear about, because iAds was killed just a week ago, if they talk about that, about Apple News, because they were underreporting subscriptions to the publishers for a long time, a couple of issues there, and I'd be very curious what they say about Apple Music. So I'm going to be interested in what they say about services. Of course, I want to see Mac sales up because I mean, I still love the Mac. I don't want to ever give up on the Mac. iPad sales, my gut is iPad Pro is not going to be a big seller. Those who love it, love it. And boy, the new GarageBand and iPad Pro.
Yeah.
But I don't think that the iPad is a big part of their business. It's really about the iPhone now, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I think they need to move past everything. That to some degree. But I think I think what will be interesting is also how much they talk about encryption. You know, this has been a big push, and I wonder if they'll use this as an opportunity to say a couple things about the importance of it.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that they talk about pretty much every time you let them talk in public.
And Tim Cook has said, and somebody in your chat room pointed this out, we don't go quarter by quarter. We're not that kind of company.
They don't have to be when you have $200 billion.
And they shouldn't be. I mean, that's kind of the bane of business in America these days, is this kind of focus on the short-term results. And it's great that Apple doesn't have to do that.
Well, and I think that the advantage of them, whether they ever decide to become private or whatever, I think one of the advantages of doing stock buybacks is that the impact of the stock on the company is reduced every time they do that. You know, and so as they do it more and more and more, it really makes them, maybe they don't get rid of all the stock and stay a publicly traded company, but the fact that people are selling or become almost, really becomes noise to Apple if they can continue to do buybacks. And these, when the stock goes down, gives them an opportunity to do that, cost effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if there might ever be a time where they wouldn't announce that they're going to have a couple of down years, but they're saying that part of our plan for the future is to focus on this big stuff that's going to take us 2 or 3 or 4 years to even engineer, let alone bring to market. And so we're perfectly okay if people are upset with us for not having record profits every quarter as usual. And if you are so upset by that that you want to sell some of your stock, that's great. There are going to be people waiting in Cupertino to buy it from you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that the again, I think that there are many things that they're working on or they're rumored to be working on that I think could be, you know, really a big deal. You know, I think the cars, if done well, I mean, I think the Tesla's exciting. It's really expensive.
I just bought one.
You bought a Tesla?
Yeah. I don't have it yet. You know, that's Tesla's one of those things where you buy it and then a couple of years later you get it.
I was thinking of buying a Tesla and then I decided to buy an encoder.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Oh, no, it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
So,
but
yeah.
Was I dumb? I figure I only leased it for three years. And it's going to take Apple a few years to get a Project Titan.
No, I was very close.
Four wheels.
Yeah.
I got the X.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
When does it show up?
You know what it really is? It's a giant iPhone charger is what it really is on wheels.
Is that
you told the X,
90, yeah. It's a 90 kilowatt iPhone charger.
Nice.
It can charge
that
for
will
days.
Also drive.
Huh?
It turns out it also drives every once in a while.
Not only that, but if the studio ever loses power, it will just basically like park it against the wall like one of those Tesla home
exactly.
Home
yeah, exactly.
Leo, it might be delayed a bit.
Why?
There's been a fire at the Tesla factory in Fremont.
You know what? I'm just snake bit.
My boss just got his Tesla X. He's been showing it off all
He
week.
Did?
Yeah.
See, I'm trying to keep up with your boss.
He put up a video.
Why
he was very happy.
Junkers to Winnipeg.
Yeah. What color did he get? Okay, so I was thinking. So I'm driving a car from the future, so it should look like it's in the future. So right. I was going to get a white car with white seats. Like, so it'd be like riding in the Disney monorail.
Right.
But then Lisa talked me out of it and said, you shouldn't do that. It's a very bad idea. Anyway.
I'm kind of all black myself.
Now that there's a fire at the factory, I think it may be even longer. I tried to call them.
Let's hope it's not a battery fire.
I tried to call them. I realize now what a doofus I must have sounded like. I was trying to find out when it was going to, like, okay, so when will I get it?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, I don't know. And I said, But I kind of need to know because my lease runs out in September. Will I get it sooner? I don't know. Will I get it later? I don't know. Is there anybody there who knows? I asked.
I don't know.
So he said, I'll send an email. But now I realize.
Now he's evacuated the building.
He was telling the absolute God's truth. No one knows.
Right.
How long did your boss wait?
He must have gotten a signature
or something, right?
I have the video. I'll try and stick it in the comments for the.
Leah, anyway, I don't want to make you worry, but did you buy this car on Kickstarter by any chance?
No.
It sounded awfully familiar.
I did just order. I think there's something wrong with me. I did just order a floating Japanese bonsai on Kickstarter.
I saw that. I really want a floating Japanese bonsai.
Bonsai?
What's wrong with me?
Don't buy anything. It's like funding something on Kickstarter is like giving a loan to a personal friend.
Yeah.
You do it on the principle that I will never see this money again. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
That's why the only thing I ever fund on Kickstarter are creative projects where even if I never get the book or the CD or the video, I'm pleased that I'm at least funding the development of this.
And the funny thing is that the Kickstarter stuff comes out so much later than you funded it. It's like Christmas because you just like get this box in the mail and you're like, what is this? I didn't order anything from B&H. And then you open it up and you're like, whoa.
I don't have any USB ports on my computer anymore that work with this, but okay.
Exactly.
Wow, Centronics 50 pin.
It's got an ADB port.
Yeah, it's great when you get like an iPhone 4S accessory when you just bought your 5S. It's always the best part of Kickstarter. It was white, Leo, white with a black trim.
I almost did that too because, it's like the future. But instead I got some boring color that just looks like regular car. But it's okay.
I can't make that kind of a long-term commitment to always wearing clean clothes. I can't.
Right. That's what Lisa said. She said, you're not going to get white. What are you, crazy? We have a 13-year-old. You're not going to get.
But yeah, exactly. 2 years later, it's just the slightest non-white.
That's what I thought. So, it'll get yellow. Elon says it won't. Elon says, no, no, no. These seats, this is space-age material. He calls it vegan leather.
I have that on the 1999 sedan that
that's what I wanted. Is that what your boss got?
I called it vinyl.
No, this is the guy. Yeah, this is another guy. Look at the fob is the shape of your Tesla, and that's when the doors work. That's what they'll look like.
I have the 16th Stormtrooper.
Yeah, doesn't that look like a Stormtrooper?
Yeah.
My wife.
I stuck the video in the.
My wife would let me buy the Stormtrooper version.
And it looks pretty hot.
It'll be fun.
Although I can tell you the white seats in general are.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I know.
We shot something for Virgin America before they were flying, and they have those white seats in the first class, and one of the guys left a mark on it, and there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of stress about
Keep
it.
Talking. I'm in contact with Redis Labs. I'm trying to get our site working. So you guys
pretty much after that,
take it from here.
It's pretty much after that shoot that I decided I never want white seats. Ever.
If we're gonna need to kill time, I also bought my own vehicle, a brand new vehicle, on Friday, just before the snow. It is first new vehicle I've bought like ever, and it is a beautiful 2016 Trek 7.2 FX bicycle.
Very good.
And technology, it moves in all directions, and if you blink, you'll miss it. Because I stopped riding the, swear to God, the 1983 Univega I bought in school, because 10 speeds were not enough to get my butt up hills, like as of like 10 or 12 years ago.
Hi, everybody.
Is this the video of your boss?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see your boss's Tesla. Oh, it's the same one. We already saw that one. So, that's not your boss. Don't play that. That's okay.
So, Andy, it's 0 to 60 and never.
It's just that like on the with 10 speeds on that old bike, it was like I would ride around, and at some point there'd be a hill where now like I'm transportation for the bicycle because I have to get off and just like push the bike up the hill or die. And I thought that's it'd be less embarrassing to push the bike than to be. Not failure to resuscitate, but I took this thing for a test drive on Friday, and I was actually looking for like hills, and like there's so many gears in this thing. It's like at the very, very worst, I'm going up that hill at the same speed at which I would be walking, but I'm still riding the bicycle, and I can't ride it. And it's also like I've got it's in the shop because I've got them like installing a whole bunch of things, add-ons on it, but it's like I've been on Google Maps trying to figure. Okay, well I often go there. That's within bicycling distance. Okay, well, when I need to drop something off at FedEx, that's within bicycling distance. And you feel dumber and dumber to realize that pretty much I almost never go anywhere that I couldn't conceivably ride a bike.
Well, you know that with enough fortitude, in the right weather, the Twit house is in bicycle distance. I mean, you just have to...
From anywhere.
Yeah, I mean...
A lot of hotel stops, but yeah.
Yeah, you know. But.
A few significant portages at the Great Lakes, maybe.
You could do it. You could do it, Andy.
If you Best Western to sponsor me, I will go from Boston to the Twit to the Brick House.
I'm working on it right now.
I want a Panera bread and a Panera card and a Chipotle card. I will eat at Panera's in the morning, Chipotle.
Now to get back to Mac issues though, do you have CarPlay in the Trek?
Really, really inconvenient to have that car battery on the rear deck so I could have that big Pioneer head between the bars. Okay. But it, on the test ride, it worked kind of fun. But that is kind of the fun part of this because I've been walking like forever. And like always never using like the bike button on all these different apps. And now I'm like, okay, well, what kind of electronics do I want on this thing? And the nice thing about the Trek is that it actually has like built into like the part of the frame is an actual like pod that you can insert like a sensor so it doesn't hang off the side. Right. And of course that'll be weather sealed. It'll communicate via Bluetooth. But now it's like it took me all of about... it's not as though I decided in 5 or 10 minutes, the wire cutter, this was the wire cutter's recommendation for a commuter bike. And the more I read about it, like elsewhere, the more I was sure that it was at least a good starting point. Then when I wrote it, it's like, okay, perfect. But now it's going to take me like 8 times as long to choose an app for my phone to communicate with this pod thing. because I unfortunately, Russ, I don't know anything about bicycles, and I was willing to trust an expert who is a very good communicator with these. So I know about apps, and I know how things communicate. I know about battery life. So I'm going to be the expert here. And it's like you come to appreciate, you like someone who will just simply say, if you don't want to read very, very far, in the first three sentences, I will tell you, just get the Trek FX.
That's why I like Wirecutter, right? The whole idea is, you know, there's Wirecutter, one.
This is, I mean, I'm probably going to do a blog post or a column about it. It's like, for things that I don't know, I don't feel as though I know much about it, I'm now at the point where I will just simply buy whatever they tell me to buy. And I didn't just go out and this is like a $450 bike. So it's not like I just like, okay, whatever. I did like, you know, look at message boards and talk to friends who are bicyclists. But for everything else, I bought the rack that they recommended. I bought the lights they recommended. I bought like all the other accessories that they recommended. I didn't buy the helmet they recommended, but only because I couldn't find it locally, and I definitely wanted to try it on locally. But I read their entire description start to finish where they said, look, even if you spend just $20 for a helmet, as long as it has a certification, they're pretty much all the same. It's all about comfort and convenience. And so I can't say enough nice things about Wirecutter.
Awesome team.
Yeah. And they've grown. And now they do home and everything.
And I have friends who it's another thing, nice thing is having friends who work there, so you know that, oh, isn't that okay, so I trust these people. Good. They're not idiots.
By the way, it does I do remember Steve Jobs in the Walter Isaacson biography talks about buying a washing machine. You remember that?
Yes.
And obsessing for weeks.
Making his family research.
And they would just have discussions at dinner about which washing machine to get. Yeah. And finally settled on one that took a very, very long time, but made your clothes really, really soft.
And then he had no furniture for a long time, too.
There's a setting for that. Decide, yeah.
Yeah.
It had to be perfect. I'm more like you, Andy. Just tell me what the best one is. I'll get that. And I realize that too on the radio show. People call in, they ask for recommendations. And in the past, I would say, well, you know, Lenovo's good. Dell makes it pretty good.
No,
just say one, and that's it.
Yeah, but then they're gonna go buy it.
Boom.
Yeah,
I didn't. I went through the same thing when I was buying my camera a few years ago. Where this is like the intersection between. I feel as though I know a lot about digital cameras. I also feel as though I know a lot about photography in general. But there were also a lot of opinions that I really, really value. And it was also giving me a lot of – every technical review was giving me so much information that I thought, okay, let's take a look at this low light comparison. Let's take a look at this graph that DxO has. And I really came to realize that it really affected the way that I write my own reviews, in which I really feel as though it's my responsibility to make sure in the first couple of paragraphs I at least let you know where things are going. And if I'm going to be talking about three or four, I will say right at the top, this is my favorite keyboard and here's why. But I'll show you exactly why these three are pretty good.
Looks like
at some point you get so bogged down in graphs and charts, the camera stuff. Yeah. I was putting myself through
time.
Hell. I found the perfect one,
that.
But
yeah.
It's like this is unnecessary information. I felt guilty for like the way that I was reviewing cameras earlier because I thought my reviews were positive and helpful, but there were details that I maybe could confuse people. Like, here is this picture blown up to 400%, so you can see this bit of noise here.
But I think that one of the things, because I've been thinking about starting, I stay in a lot of hotel rooms and I've been threatening to review hotel rooms, you know, and because it's like.
That's a good idea. That's very useful. Thank you on behalf of everybody on the internet.
All right. I'll start doing my own little reviews. I'll take little pictures.
That's why
and everything
Yelp
else.
Is great and Amazon reviews are great.
And those are good, but everyone does something different. My whole thing is here's the deal. I'm gonna nick you. If I don't get a full size ironing board and an iron,
okay,
I'm gonna nick you. You know, there's certain like things
you
that
you have
that,
needs beyond those.
No, but I'll
men.
Say what
I don't
they are.
Need
I'm not
an
gonna,
ironing board.
But I'm gonna say I'm just gonna have a little chart that
me.
Says
it's
didn't
just
have
me.
This.
Yeah.
No, you can decide. I'm just gonna tell you. I went to this hotel room, and these are the things it had. These are the things it didn't have. And then we can talk about all the subjective stuff.
And this is Lisa, not me talking. Mm-hmm. Hotel rooms that don't have electric plugs in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Because then you can't blow dry your hair. She has to go out in the room and blow dry her hair.
Right.
And apparently it must be because we were in a very, very fancy French hotel, the Mandarin in France, in Paris. Beautiful hotel.
No.
Went and brand new. Went down to the desk. Said, there's no, is there, am I missing something? Is there not a plug in the bathroom? They said, no, it's not safe.
Mais non, monsieur Le Paul.
It's not safe.
So I've noticed that I very rarely see them in 220 hotel rooms.
Yeah, you maybe know, that's because so it isn't safe. It's 220.
Safe. Well, no matter what the circuit is, you're still going to get a shock.
Yeah. So the more and more rooms now are putting USB ports in the room, which I do appreciate. By the bed, so, would be and, nice. That's nice.
And to get a perfect rating, you could not like. So in Singapore, for instance, all the hotels have those ultimate. Like every plug can go into it, into the wall, you know, no matter what, where you come and what country you're from, except for maybe South Africa, because you guys are crazy. The like all it's like this combination. I think I even have one.
Of course you have one. What were you saying, Renee?
I was saying like, a lot of hotels still don't even have a plug near the bed. So if you want to like charge your phone, it's ridiculous.
Like the plug is across the room on the floor, hidden behind the dresser because they don't want you to use it.
So I unplug the clock. I mean,
that's, right. That's what I carry two of those.
So the thing is, though, is in Singapore, I've never been to a Singapore hotel that doesn't have this. Every plug looks like this.
Yeah.
Because
it handles everything.
Here's a news flash. If you're a hotel, people are coming from other countries.
Right.
Please. Just, all you have to do is do this.
So it's a weird plug. It looks like a alien human.
Right.
But it has enough holes in it that you could plug in almost anything.
And this
right?
one will actually fit South Africa. South Africa is the hardest one because of these huge
round. Those British ones are weird.
Well, the British was easy compared to South Africa.
British will work in that?
Yes, oh, yeah, Felix, yeah. Man, we have different plugs
British,
and...
Both British, French, New Zealand / Australia, which is those little three-prongers.
Yeah.
Like just about everything fits into this
and
one
this,
plug.
This, I thought you were going to promote this this power strip. Mine has USB ports though, right there. Yours.
I'm always afraid of putting USB ports in these things.
Well, it's a surge suppressor, though.
No, I'm afraid of.
It's a three-plug surge suppressor.
It just scares me.
Okay.
I want to put the USB thing in its own wall wart. I don't want to have a USB, but this one. We have lots of these, but the big thing is I told my wife when we ever build a house. There we go.
Yeah,
right there.
That's good.
Every outlet,
every socket, because you get a lot of international visitors.
I do. Actually.
By the way, I think Twitter also didn't pay their Redis bill because Twitter apparently has just gone down.
It was a bad day for
oh god,
everybody
they
with
just
a website.
Got popped by Facebook, didn't they?
Twitter was Abe Vigoda'd.
No,
yeah, he was using a South African plug. Alex just couldn't.
He is, you know, that Renee's South African.
I know, but you've seen those plugs.
Ech, man, I tell you, we use them so that Americans can't come here and plug things in.
Love it.
You can't use that here.
No, not here.
Love it. Redis Labs has report. I finally tweeted, which I know is a mean. It's kind of a mean thing to do.
Nobody's
in the office, so you get voicemail, and I've been leaving voicemails all morning.
Well, it's not like I think the big thing is that you just didn't really spend very much money with them.
Apparently not. It's cheap, you know. Redis is cash, right? So everything else is working.
Right.
The cheapest thing is the caching, which is using Redis to cache, and it's like $30 a month. But the credit card expired in September, and I didn't know that. And because right. I got a lot of email from, and it all goes into a pile of Redis email. And my fault. I'm totally my fault. Totally my fault. But literally for $144, my whole site is down.
It's funny, Leo, but I didn't get back from Amazon for like a month. I ordered a camera, it never arrived. No one would get back to me. They always say they would, they never did. I tweeted within 24 hours, I had someone on the phone.
That's the nuclear option. I understand.
I feel like that's fair.
That's fair. And no, I hate to do it. So if you're in the chat room and you're going, where is my tweet? Live.twit.tv is still working because everything else is working.
All things Twit. Twitter, Twit.
Twitter's down.
It's a Twitpocalypse.
Stupid. Actually, Twitter's back up. That was apparently just a brief message. Yeah, it was a brief message. I couldn't resist the joke. Our show today brought to you by something that will keep you from ever going down with your storage. Drobo. Love my Drobo. This is the new Drobo Mini, which is super cool in so many ways. This one is USB or Thunderbolt, and it's small enough that you could, if you were a photographer or videographer and you wanted a lot of high-capacity, reliable, redundant storage, just two pounds, but it does have four drive bays for the smaller laptop-sized drive, so that means you could get up to 8 terabytes in there of redundant storage. And what's great about Drobo is it's so easy. You pop it out, and you can mix and match. Drives don't have to match in Drobo. It's one of the things I love about them. This drive is, 512. Actually, I don't see it anywhere, but I think it's 512. But let's say I need more capacity. Even while it's running, even while I'm using it, I pop out a drive, put in a new one, it rebuilds, and I'm good to go. It's so awesome. They also make other units. The 5D is a desktop unit that has space for 5 3.5-inch drives, so you get up to 64 terabytes. This is really sweet too. On the Drobo Mini, they have a little slot for caching SSD. So I put 128 gig caching SSD in there, and that really speeds small file writes up. Which is there's just all sorts of cool features on this. The Drobo's been around for a while. We've talked about them for years. You know about them, I'm sure. I just wanted to let you know they're getting better and better. This mSATA SSD acceleration bay is just one example. Really works great with Lightroom or Apple Photos. The 5N is their network attached storage. It's a media server, a file server, a backup solution. You just plug it into your switch or router. It's going. Apps let you backup data to two different cloud service providers. Or, I love this, they now support BitTorrent Sync.
Nice.
Really great. It also works well with Plex and the new Apple TV. Drobo's been advertising a MacBreak Weekly since, I think, the very beginning. So we're really...
I have lots of them.
...proud to be associated with them. It's reliable, it's expandable, it's simple. There are colored lights on the front of the Drobo that let you know exactly what's going on.
Well, they're also just fun to look at.
Yeah. It's nice to have a Drobo on your desk. Put a Drobo on your desk. Drobo.com/twit. And when you use the code TWIT100, you're going to save $100 off the purchase of a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-Bay, or the Drobo 5N. What? $100 off. Drobo.com/twit. We love Drobo and we thank them so much for their continued ongoing support of MacBreak Weekly. 20 minutes till the first. You think about 1:15 Pacific time, 12:15. What time do you think we'll get? An hour and 20 minutes from our first information from Apple.
The conference call is usually at 2 p.m. Pacific, so yes. The press release goes out half an hour before that, so okay. Around 1:30 p.m.
Okay, so we got a little time, an hour and a half. Still time to speculate. iOS, a couple of betas came out. iOS 9.3 beta 2 came out, and today I think OS 10 beta came out, didn't it? Or am I wrong?
Well, I think earlier this week they all came out. They updated the betas out for everything. Okay. Yeah.
Anything to report?
I mean, it's beta stuff. The one that was really interesting was the Apple TV. They pushed out a pre-beta release, so there's a general release for everybody. You can go get it now and get the podcast app finally, which is nice.
Yay! That's for the TV.
Yeah.
But that, it's pre-beta? What does that mean?
No, so they put out the new beta for the Apple TV, but they also put out a release version of one. I think it's 9.1.1 or something.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have to wait for the beta. You can go get that now, and you'll get the podcast app immediately.
That came out yesterday, so get it.
Yeah.
Install it.
You can watch all of us at MacBreak Weekly right from the official app right on your
There are now a lot of ways to watch. You could be there. Four total, I think, Twit apps on the Apple TV. Thank you to our just fans who've written those and done such
awesome.
A great job.
The only big advantage to the official client is that if you subscribe in iTunes on your computer, it'll sync your status and everything in between.
Well, Patrick just told me there's now 5 apps plus the podcast app. There's 6.
So many options.
I love it. See, we've been begging you for an app store for so long. It was pent up demand.
Well, I think this is going to be a great little, I mean, now with the US support for Bluetooth keyboards, I mean, you end up with this kind of lightweight computer.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of folks. And as these apps start to proliferate, I have to admit, I go up to the App Store probably almost every day to see what's new. Like, what's new that you could do, and that someone's figured out to do with the Apple TV.
I have some good news. I finally broke down and ordered a case for my 12-inch MacBook, so that means there'll probably be a new one any minute now.
Yeah, exactly.
March.
You think? March.
The Skylake, I mean, I was hoping Skylake M would be much better than the current Broadwell M, and doesn't look like it's going to be, so.
Boy, Microsoft is having a hell of a time with the Skylake. Their Surface Pro and my Surface Book, the power settings and stuff just are broken as hell. Like, they call it the hot bag syndrome, where you sleep it, you close it, you put it in your bag, and you take it out an hour later, the battery's dead, and it didn't shut down. The laptop's really hot. And all of this, Microsoft's blaming on Skylake. They're saying it's a difficult computer science problem.
It has nothing to do with the Patriots.
Sounds like a freshman in computer 101.
I guess it depends on Apple's. The Skylake, I think, on Apple is still restricted to Microsoft, to the iMac 27-inch. I don't think they've put it in anything else yet. So we'll see when they go to Skylake. with the rest. But I mean, the dirty secret in the chip business now is they're all pretty much the same. Intel's advantage, much like Microsoft's advantage in mobile, has evaporated. Samsung's gotten really good. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing has gotten really good. They're all in these tiny processes now.
Yeah.
Qualcomm feels like they're falling behind, especially in IP. Like, it feels like Apple is doing better ARM IP than Qualcomm is now, which if you told anyone that 5 years ago, they'd think you're out of your mind. But you know, it really is a different world now, and Intel just can't be taken for granted to be making good chips anymore. They have to earn it like everybody else.
Those chips may appear
soon
in
spring.
A 5SE as well. So March, it sounds like we do think there's going to be a March announcement. And one of the things Mark Gurman's saying is the iPhone 5SE will be announced then. We've known this for a while. This will be a 4-inch. But the thing that's interesting is he says likely to have the A9 and M9 chips. And his logic makes sense, which is this is going to be the low end of the Apple line, but you want it to have the same capabilities as an iPhone.
And will it have the fingerprint reader?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it allows the Apple Pay.
And the Hey Shlomo, always on Hey Shlomo.
Well, so that's the big thing. The A9, it's such a small screen that they don't really need to push around that many pixels, which is the big problem on the iPhone 6 Plus. It's almost an iPad-sized pixels they're pushing around. But for this, what the A9 does is it's a better image processor for the cameras, which is nice, but it enables Hey Siri because the processor is integrated into the DAI. So it allows for a much better sort of efficiency.
And do we expect the same resolution on the camera?
So whether they go with the 12 megapixel like they have on the iPhone 6S, probably not. I mean, like for Apple, there's two things that people think of when they think of the smaller screen. There are some people who just want a smaller screen. That way their thumb can reach all the way across, or it fits in their pocket better, or whatever the reason. They just really want an iPhone with a smaller screen. But other people equate small with being less expensive. And that's kind of weird if you grew up in electronics where miniaturization was always super expensive. But if the iPhone 6 Plus is $100 more, people think, oh, the iPhone 6 minus is going to be $100 cheaper. So there is something to be said for component cost control, and getting Apple to make A9 chips becomes cheaper the more that they make, and using the camera assembly from an iPhone 6 instead of an iPhone 6S is still cheaper from a component standpoint for them.
Right. And I think it'd be fine. I mean, I would love to have a cheaper option for buying, for instance, lots of them for a company or for my kids. I just bought two for my kids, my older kids, and they were very expensive. When it all came down, it would be really nice if they had a cheaper version of it, especially if you buy them outside of a plan. You get kind of the real cost of these phones. So I think that definitely seeing something in the $600, $700 range or, you know, without a plan would be...
I think it's $450, I think, is the spot it takes, because it'll replace the 5S. The 5S will time out, and they don't want to move the 6 down, because then you have, well, everything looks like an iPhone 6, and there's 4.7 and 5.5. There's no 4-inch option anymore. And it's all marketing is about controlling perceptions. You have the cheap phone that gets everyone in the door, the medium phone that almost everyone buys, and the expensive phone that people who are obsessed with premium stuff buy. And usually you want to sort of manage margin so that as many people as possible fall into the middle bucket. And part of doing that is having that sort of in-the-door introductory model being at the lower price point, but having lower specs that will turn off your premium buyers.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I'm pretty happy with the S, not the Plus. I mean, I had the Plus on the first one it came out, thinking I'd try the bigger one, but I went back to the smaller one, and just more convenient. Fits in more of my pockets. I think that's the issue, given that I wrap it with basically a wallet. I realized I'm actually become the Merlin Mann guy. the talking into my wallet.
So, I like, and I think it was you who told me about this, Renee, the just press record. I really like that. I can do those voice memos on my watch now. It is awesome. So awesome.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely terrific. Anytime you have an idea, like that's why I like the whole moving into Siri and notes and just press record, because you're driving or you're busy and you just have this great idea and you know that you're old enough that you're going to forget it, and you forget that you even had an idea. And being able to record it anytime in any place, it just lets you relax and not worry about remembering everything.
Right.
It's phenomenally good stuff.
Phenomenal.
I'm excited for that phone, though. As much as I find small screens claustrophobic now, because the human brain is remarkable at adjusting. So the minute you get something big, everything else looks small. The minute you get something small, everything else looks big.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who really love that small screen size, and it's nice that Apple's going to be not only maintaining it, but having a newer version of it.
I do like being able to type with one hand, like holding, being able to hold the iPhone and do that, which I just can't do with the big. My hands are not big enough for a 6S Plus to actually, you know.
And it's the weight. I mean, like, because you have to, the 6 Plus is not just the size, it's the balance. You hold it at the bottom to type with one hand, and suddenly it's super heavy. And it sounds silly because it's such a small thing, but trying to walk and type and drink coffee at the same time, that weight makes a huge difference.
I do think it's important to have all the phones out there supporting Apple Pay, because I think that that's going to that's going to be a big push. Although the thing I'm most excited about with Apple Pay is the web. Being able to pay over the web with Apple Pay.
And send payments would be nice when they introduce that. It would be awesome. I can just send Alex $10. Yeah, really quickly.
I think peer-to-peer is great. I think that the big thing for me is that I realize how many times I walk away from a site because I'm like, oh, I don't want to put all my billing stuff back in again. You know, and I don't want to deal with that again. It's why I buy so much stuff from B&H and Amazon, is because those are like my two sites that I've kind of stopped buying anything important that's video, audio, video related from Amazon, because I don't know where it's going to show up in my yard. But you know, for the general stuff that I don't care about being rained on after OnTrack, not that bitter, but after OnTrack leaves it somewhere in the vicinity of my house, like within the same block of my house, that when that's okay, then I order it there. But I notice that I go to other sites and I really want to see if it's on Amazon or B&H, because I don't really want to deal with a new thing. And I think that, I know Google Wallet does that, but I think that Apple might be able to expand to the Apple users, you know, to be able to do that easily.
And it's way better, because I don't want to trust all these different sites with my credit card information, because invariably they get compromised and then my credit card has to, and with Apple, they're just giving a one-time use token. So even if that site does get compromised, it's of no value.
Well, I just saw what happened with my Bank of America card. They quietly just said, we're going to send you a new card. There was a compromise, and then they just sent me a new card, and they just turned my card off. I was in Africa, and they just turned my card just stopped working, you know, as an emergency procedure. And it turned out, I think it was Hilton or Hyatt got hacked, you know, and I just think that the future is definitely one-time access. So
yeah, there was a great article, Craig Huckenberry from the Icon Factory, the people who make Twitterific, wrote an article for us, because he was away on vacation and his card was compromised, and the new one just appeared on Apple Pay. He didn't have to wait for the physical card to arrive.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was terrific. He didn't lose anything. He was able to pay for anything he needed.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
That would have kept our website up. Next time I'm using Apple Pay.
I still think, I mean, when we talk about growth, I mean, I know, you know, I sounded crazy when I talked about cars 5 years ago, that Apple should be getting into cars. And I still think that Apple Pay, the end result somewhere down the road, 5-10 years from now, is an Apple Bank, you know, where Apple does saving, you know, Apple only servicing its own loans for its own products would be a good business. You know, and Apple Pay puts them between the consumer and the banks.
I hate that idea,
but I think that that's.
I just feel like.
I think it's the obvious, because there's a lot of people. I mean, I would. I hate to say it. I'd drop B&A and B of A.
Pretty soon, you're going to have an Apple Car. You're going to have an Apple credit card. Apple accounts. Apple.
And you know what? They'll all work well.
Be
together.
A marshmallow world. Oh, wait a minute. Shouldn't say that.
But they'll all work well together. They'll all just kind of like, everything will sync, everything will work. You know, there's a lot of people that just don't care about.
You know who wants to make it a Microsoft world? Microsoft. They just launched just today a Bing-powered news app for iOS.
Yeah.
News Pro. That now, and they have their, I don't know why anybody would want this, but they have the keyboard app for Windows Phone is now.
I saw that. I thought of was like, wow, that looks really weird. I don't want
no
that.
No idea why anybody would want that.
Even if you love the Windows keyboard, Apple's still not great on third-party keyboards.
Well, that's why I
iOS.
Stopped. I went right back. Yeah. Eventually, because it switches in secure situations, they want you to use the Apple keyboard. It's just too confusing. As much as I hate the Apple keyboard, I don't use a third-party keyboard on iOS, because that's one of the reasons I do have to say I love an iPad Pro with a keyboard, because using
awesome.
Keyboard on iOS is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, they also brought back the keyboard to Apple TV, which is super interesting now, because people are looking into whether they can apply keyboards to games the way they do on a PC. And it's not clear yet, because I think in the official SDK, it only takes key down and not key up. And that makes a difference in gaming. But, you know, you fast forward a year or two, once you start having like a real sort of computery computer in front of your TV that's still easy to use, it sort of opens up a lot of possibilities.
So I don't see News Pro. I'm trying to download. Have you been able to download it, Renee? Or
no.
Yeah. Here it is, News Pro, your work news. It's not an iPad app. It's an iPhone app.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll install on the iPad, which will give us a giant.
Everybody's trying to get. I mean, when you look at Google, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, trying to basically get into the news business is definitely become the business.
Yeah, and Google too, with Google with AMP, Facebook with Facebook's News, Apple with Apple News. Although, Microsoft's a little late to the game on this. News Pro, hyper-relevant news for your work, personalized.
Apple's a little bit hindered by their culture because they kept all the news stuff so secret that the minus one privacy home search page doesn't know about news. And not even secret, just in development. Like, the people didn't know that Apple was making a news app. So when you go to the Siri page, you get news that's not from the news app. It's just sort of random. And then you go to Safari and you're reading. Like, none of the stuff works together. And that's the one thing that's hard for Apple, is to get past their traditional secrecy and make a product that just, like, news should be an operating system level service. I should be able to go anywhere. I follow you on Twitter, Leo. You recommend an article, that should show up in news for me.
I agree.
If I save an article like to the reading list, that should show up in the news app for me. I shouldn't have these little silos on iOS.
Well, that's why I like Nuzzle, for instance. Nuzzle is a good example of a news app that uses social signals and does a good job. This is clearly, Microsoft's product is clearly aimed at business, very much so.
I'm so hooked to Flipboard that I'm just going to have a hard time looking at it.
Kind of interesting that the first story is Lenovo. Second story.
Let's see if somebody asks me to stop babbling.
Stop babbling.
Okay. Sorry.
It's just you thought we weren't listening to you?
No. It's just I've been trying to participate for the past 5 or 10 minutes.
Was Andy muted? I'm sorry.
I didn't know if, yeah, exactly. It wasn't me like getting more and more irked. It was more, okay, at this point,
can
either they're being extremely rude
saying,
or something's been muted at my end or theirs.
I apologize.
and unfortunately, the chat didn't work on this side, so I couldn't just ping Jason to ask if
Jason, was he muted or did we do something? No, he's good. Okay. Well, anyway, you're on. Go.
Okay. Completely forgotten.
It was
so long ago. I'm serious.
Andy.
All I intended to say about the new iPhone 5 is that at least it's a really important thing for them to make this and not make it into, we're just going to repackage the old phone with the old technology. We're going to give you an old crappy phone.
Right.
Because it's not just about, it really is about embracing the diversity of the users. And for a lot of people, they just can't integrate it. Even the modern equivalent of a standard size phone to their lifestyles or their wardrobes. So if they're making a smaller or classic sized phone that can fit into clutch purses, that can fit into little pockets, that can be used well with smaller hands, and it's a really, really great thing that they're giving it the modern processor, that they're giving it. They're not saying that you can't. They're giving it Apple Pay. They're giving it Touch ID.
It shouldn't be a second class citizen, should it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a first class phone. And also, they really need to make the statement that the iPhone isn't just individual models; that it's a suite of features that's consistent across all devices. So it would make a lot of people feel minused if they didn't have the ability to do Touch ID, for instance. But anybody who buys a larger phone could. So.
All right. The Heroku dinos have been restarted.
Yeah,
those can get expensive.
The modern internet is, and twit.tv is back up. Thank God. Okay. Ooh. So I apologize. Our long national nightmare, well, my personal nightmare is over. I'm getting a lot of tweets now. Are you stupid? Yeah, I'm stupid. I'm stupid. It was a dumb thing to do. I had it on a credit card, which got either terminated or expired, and I didn't notice it. It's back in September, and they did send me support notices saying, hey, update your information, as one would do. But it comes with a bunch of other notices, you know, your stuff's happening. So I have a folder that all gets filtered into, and I didn't look. And foolish me. And then the problem was when the site went down this morning, I couldn't log in. It was like the account no longer existed. I guess they were mad at me. So we've paid our $144.
I bet you that won't happen again for many reasons on both sides.
It's, you know what? It's a small company. It's a minor service, but it's a single point of failure, and just a good thing to be aware of, you know? So we're back up. We've restarted the dinos. I love it that we have to do that. I don't even know what it means.
So I actually know a lot about dinos.
You, because of Heroku?
Yeah, we built Hazu originally on Heroku. We moved to Firebase.
It's what they call their unit of computing power.
Well, and then you can get these super dinos that are, you know, 40 times more powerful than the regular ones, but they're really expensive to run. So you have to, you know, kind of keep track of what you're doing. We accidentally, you know, burned up a couple thousand dollars in a day.
Well, accident. Yeah. I guess that's what all those emails are. Your dinos are. Yeah, I should start.
Use this idea. How many operations? And you know, the impact, but yeah.
Yes, we're back up. It's so good. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. And yes, it's my fault, and I am stupid. News Pro, does anybody want to use that Microsoft keyboard? As silly looking as
yes, I think if Apple had a keyboard system that made it reliable to use third party keyboards,
right?
They don't have to take over the whole market. They just have to create something that's useful. And as we've just been saying, there are a lot of people for whom they would love to have an alternative keyboard that could be operated one handed because of these bigger phones. It's not about creating something that displaces something else. It's about making a richer and more flexible experience. It's just, again, it just reminds me that's, replaceable keyboards was one of the things that I was really whining about missing from iOS. And when it came, it's like, oh, okay, I should have been more specific. It's nice to be able to visually see a different keyboard. I would like it so that it works so well and so in such a stable way that I won't just go back to the old one.
It's amazing if you do a search on the App Store for Microsoft, how many apps they make now. And
it's a full court press.
Yeah,
everyone makes apps. Right, it's one of the advantages of iOS is you can get apps from every other company.
Yeah,
yep,
that is true. That is really true.
And this is the great thing that happens when a company decides that we are going to try to support as many users as possible. That's you cast the widest net as you can.
Well, and I think the irony, of course, I think they've given up on their own OS. I mean, I think that that's I don't think that's true.
I think they acknowledge that the 90s and the early 2000s are definitely over.
I don't mean Windows. I mean the Windows Phone. You know, I don't.
Oh,
it's yeah. never gonna it's well, never gonna get off the would, ground.
They would agree with that because they would say that there is no more Windows Phone. There's just Windows 10. I think it's going to be a long time before their biggest problem is that they're having almost no success whatsoever getting developers excited about making apps that are targeting phones. All the real action is still happening inside the desktop style apps. So Surface Pro 4 is a wonderful tablet. I mean that without any reservation, but it still mostly shines when you're running it as a Windows desktop sort of device that has a little bit of extra flexibility. It's still kind of embarrassing that you can't get you can't get the sort of desktop class apps for the iPad Pro that you can for Windows Surface Pro, but you also can't get the sort of apps that really leverage the strength of having a tablet with a really good pencil as you can with the iPad Pro. So,
let's see. I'm just looking through the rundown. Apple I don't know. You tell me. Can we trust it? A leaked iPad Air 3 design pointing to 4 speakers and LED flash. This comes from a site I'm not familiar with, the iDownload blog. Actually, I'm sorry. They're republishing a French blog, nowhereelse.fr.
Yeah, there's a lot of sites that get stuff from China and then republish it for English speakers. And sometimes it is accurate because a lot of stuff leaks out of the Chinese manufacturing and supply chain.
On prétend du plan schématique de l'iPad. How do you say iPad in French? L'iPad?
iPad.
Oui, L'iPad. L'iPad. C'est en fuite. That's all I know.
Cheese?
Yeah. Now, the 4 speakers make sense because there's 4 speakers on the iPad Pro.
Sort of, but the iPad Pro has such a the thing with the iPad Pro is that it's so big and you can't fill it with battery because the battery adds weight, but also it becomes illegal to ship it.
Oh.
It has too high a density of cells.
Interesting.
Lithium ion battery regulations are voluminous and highly restrictive.
Yeah.
So Apple had the opportunity to put these huge cavernous speakers in there. So the iPad Pro is much more constrained by size. You know, they can put a bigger, relatively bigger battery in there. So whether these are going to be the full-on giant concussive speakers of the iPad Pro, hard to tell. They might just be 4 smaller sort of speakers in the same position.
Who was that? Was it a Kickstarter project that couldn't be shipped because there was a blinking blue light on the product and the company thought it was on? The DHL or whoever was shipping from China thought it was on. And, of course, with lithium-ion batteries, they didn't want to take the chance.
Yeah.
And somebody had to go over and say, no, that means it's just just low power.
They said, no, it's just a hoverboard. It's fine.
Yeah, well,
that's a funny thing because a bunch of reviewers said, why don't they just fill the whole thing with battery? And it's, well, it would be technically illegal to ship it to customers.
Isn't that fascinating? I had no idea.
Yeah.
More than that, but why you could ship a laptop with that kind?
Yeah, it's not just the size of the battery, but it's the way the cells are created inside those batteries. And there's things you could do to sort of futz with that.
Yeah.
But those aren't the sort of things Apple does on an iPad.
Should people, just your advice on the betas that came out yesterday, should people update to their watch to beta 2? It's probably not worth it.
So the watch, no, because the watch is not even a public beta for it.
Okay.
There's new maps and there's the ability to sync two watches, but you have to install a certificate. It's still a process. Okay. It's not really person friendly. For iPhone and iPad, still, like, I think the last beta, Apple Pencil wasn't working properly on the iPad Pro. So if you really depend on the Apple Pencil, then why risk it just to get a few beta? And they're really nice education features and stuff. But if you don't absolutely need it and you don't have a spare, it's always wise to wait and see what happens to other people first.
Yeah. It's generally a no for me if you're thinking about running a beta for... That's often why I might have a loaner from Apple that goes for 5 or 6 months, but I will still buy one of my own because I want to check betas on something, and I really have if it's something that I need to have a stable platform for, and I know I'm going to want it for my library anyway. It's like, yeah, don't try anything on a beta. That's going to be reliable. Certainly nothing that if it were my primary device, no way in hell.
Fire at the Tesla plant, fire at the Foxconn plant where the iPhone is made. Wow. Two floors engulfed in flames. That's not good.
It's still going? Oh, that's not.
No, this is old. This is from People's Daily.
I think it worked out. It was the air conditioning shaft or something like that.
Yeah, unclear. I mean, it's not the first time. There have been explosions and fires in the past. According to the Wall Street Journal, there was one in 2011 at the iPad 2 production factory. Three workers were killed, 15 injured, and that really slowed down iPad production. Not sure how this will impact iPhone production. That was last night at the Foxconn plant. Wouldn't be surprised if they addressed that in the call today.
Fire is always worse than no fire.
Yeah.
There's so many great things that, like, also last week, news from... one of the voluminous lawsuits has been leaked out about the relationship that Apple has with Google and how much Google has paid to Apple for the ability to have Google search as the iPhone's default iOS's default search engine, and that payment being somewhere in the range of about $1 billion, and also with a split of revenue that is 65-35, although they weren't, it was a vague thing. They didn't know who got the larger end of that thing. It's interesting about how much people inside Apple are preparing for any questions that might come in about things they can't talk about, but they need to address it. And also, as we said before, this is one of the few times where they're making statements in public where if they say something that is not 100% Teflon correct, it's another new lawsuit. So it'll be interesting to see how they address people who might talk about fire at the Foxconn plant, who might talk about rumors about things that are happening with Apple Car, rumors about these deals that they have with Google. Interesting enough, both Google and Apple both tried to have that part of the testimony sealed. So it wasn't just Google trying to for Google's part, as part of the testimony, they said that, hey, that's not that number is never meant to go out, and it's not a real number anyway. But it's just an example of the sort of thing where if you're going to be on that stage and on that call, you got to be ready for pretty much anything that AIM is going to ask you about anything.
Project Titan at a crossroads, according to Apple Insider, and this is from their, what they say, previously.
Wouldn't it be weird if that were the actual car? that looks like a Remington Razor that they glued wheels on.
They do admit Apple artists' poor rendering of an Apple garage.
That's an East German
This Trabant.
It looks very futuristic.
We're use the Trabant as our model.
That's the Vauxhall from Top Gear, I'm pretty Vauxhall. Sure.
This is from a previously reliable source with knowledge of the team's activities, according to Apple Insider. Johnny Ive, in a post-holiday progress review, expressed his displeasure, shall we say, with the group's headway, and there is now a hiring freeze on the team responsible. We know that about 1,000 people are working on Project Titan, a Apple Car project. In fact, hiring was... so aggressive that Apple's poaching of talent from Tesla has been cited as an impact on Tesla production.
Right.
Elon Musk's response to that was the only engineers we're losing to Apple are the crappy ones.
Sour grapes.
the ones we hired to begin with.
And we didn't want them anyway. They were a big mistake.
Go ahead. Go to that Apple. We don't care.
Big jerky jerks.
Jerks.
Let me show you my new spaceship that we're landing on a robotic barge in the ocean.
Yes. Pay no attention to that.
No one else has done that except for Blue Planet. But let's not talk about that.
I love that. That fight is great. The Bezos Musk fight.
We all benefit.
I hope there's a little bit of a slip, because remember when SpaceX did their launch or their first reusable and got successful landing, wasn't it Blue Origin? Welcome to the club. We did that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's great. It's like a space race without tax money.
Right. Exactly.
UFC in words.
Well, isn't it better that they're spending it on spaceships rather than big sailboats?
Sailboats. That's what they used to battle over. Yeah. Who has the biggest yacht?
They still do.
Oh, they got enough money for the spaceship and the yacht.
Yes.
I know, but...
Well, and Apple has enough money for 1,000 engineers to work on a car on spec.
That theoretically doesn't exist.
Right. I mean, just like, well, let's see. Let's just try it. See what happens. Why not?
You know, I was thinking about that last week when a lot of these rumors were first coming out, that it must be kind of disheartening that... a lot of people would come to Apple to work on this project because they know that even if there's a pay cut involved, even if they don't have the same stature they might have had at a motor company, this is something that's genuinely exciting. That just like every electronic engineer, or many of them, would have loved to have been a part of the team that built the first Macintosh. These are people who are living a dream of doing something that's going to be historically important. But nonetheless, this is still an unannounced product. This is still unofficial. At any point, Apple can decide that this is a dead end and they need to really put all those resources into VR. And suddenly they are the chief engineer of a project that never existed, that they still can never talk about. I mean, it's great for personal growth, but it must be a little bit disheartening to know that your project could be sent into the cornfield at any moment.
And the best part is, I don't think that they're taking a pay cut. My guess is Apple is paying whatever they need to pay to bring the right engineers in to what they're ruthlessly poaching whoever they think is worth having for this.
Let's say the average salary is $150,000. I mean, $250 million a year. That's doable.
I bet you it's more than that.
The interesting thing is that we can look at recent...
Well, average salary. Some people are going to make less, right? Yeah,
not many. Not in the engineering.
All of those.
Yeah, I bet you $150,000, $200,000.
So say you're spending... Then you're spending $500 million to $1 billion a year. That's a lot of money.
We can quickly look at recent history, though. Like, if you look at the iPhone, Project Purple, that started off as a tablet project, and then they didn't think they could make a tablet, so they started making a phone. But all those technologies and a lot of those... that project was almost identical. It just ended up having a different interim application. And then pretty soon after that, they went back to making... the iPad, and all the technologies. This is why this story is quasi-fishy to me, because Titan, just like Purple, wasn't just a phone. Purple was also iOS, which ended up being a major component for Apple's future. It wasn't just the hardware and the atoms that the designers were putting together. And my guess is that Project Titan is similar, that yes, there's all these people from Tesla and other car people, but there's also all sorts of other things going on, because an Apple car wouldn't just be a Ford car. It would be a computer on wheels, the way the phone is a computer that makes calls.
And that's what the Tesla is, really. Right. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, what does a hiring freeze mean? Because Apple is still working on bits all the time. So the whole thing is, maybe there's certain parts of it that they're changing.
Well, also, the guy overseeing the project apparently left.
Well, I think that's why we have a hiring freeze, is to make sure that whoever the new guy is the guy who's making the choices of who he's bringing into his engineering.
Yeah. He's a 16-year Apple veteran. He's still there, but he's told people he's leaving for personal reasons.
And again, that's one person. It's like Jeff Williams ran Apple Watch, but there was also Kevin Lynch running the software, and there was another guy running the there are multiple people who are running that project, and not all of them have left, and all of them still have teams that are highly functional.
Apple's such an interesting company that this is one of those companies where if I know that they have a project that's this big, and there's a fact that one of the most prominent people on that team has left, and the rumor that is there's a hiring freeze, that on other companies that would make me think that, okay, maybe this is not going to move forward. With Apple, you really do have to consider that they had their research into both the technology they're developing and where they want this to be in relationship to the Apple of 2025 is that they wound up someplace they didn't expect they're going to go, and they realize that they don't have the right people and they don't have the right plan. So it's still moving forward, only they decide that they want to make a spaceship instead of a high-altitude airplane, for instance. I mean, Renee is absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's every dollar you put into something that's kind of speculative can come back three or fourfold, so long as you're investing in ideas and not in a you're not locked into a specific product that you're making.
I think they decided they want to go to three wheels.
God, I hope not. There is a big three wheel electric car project.
Yeah. Or six wheels. That'll be the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A little tank. They're going to put everything's going to be
also
a tank.
Put it in perspective, when you have 110,000 employees, 1,000 is less than 1%.
It's a small number. It's still just dabbling.
It's a rounding error.
Their biggest advantage is having so much money that they can, again, spend 5 years on something and not even be assured that they're going to get their money back for it. They're not going to love spending money on something that doesn't ship, but it's going to develop, as Renee said, it's going to develop technologies that are going to feed into a whole bunch of things.
I've talked to people who are no longer at Apple who were pretty high level, and they said that there were things that Apple developed that they spent tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars developing that he would die to have in his house, and then they just said no, it's not a viable
business we want to be in.
Yep.
I can't tell all the details, but about 6 years ago I was shown something absolutely shocking that it was a consumer level device of something that I would never have imagined a company like Apple getting into, but it was just, as you said, it was something that they put a lot of time and effort into, but then they ultimately decided it doesn't fit into our plan. I'm not saying that I was taken to a secret meeting. It was something that someone showed me, something they should not have shown me,
right,
with the understanding that I would not talk about it in any way that would affect them directly.
They're now fired.
They've left the company like 3 or 4 years ago, or else I would not have been, wouldn't be talking about it right now. But it struck me as, wow, I wonder if this person's playing a trick on me, or B, I wonder if I'm missing so much context about this that I don't know why they're working on this. But then after like the iPhone and the iPad came out, you sort of understand that, okay, that would not have made any sense given that. Mm-hmm. But it's exactly that situation where you're shocked when you have that much money. You can, quote, waste, unquote, money on things that are interesting but not necessarily going to directly make your next earnings call more interesting for the investors.
And I think that you have to do that. I mean, as a company, you have to take a lot of dead ends. In a much smaller scale, I definitely take lots of dead ends doing what we do, you know, and we just go, well, that was a mistake and, you know, that didn't work out, but we have to keep on, you know, that's how you keep moving your company forward.
And Apple has other interests. For instance, they just hired a big shot in virtual reality and AR, Doug Bowman, presumably to helm an AR research at
Apple. There's been rumors that they've already been noodling with it. Obviously, they're getting a little
more
serious.
They bought some companies, about a company last year.
They have a bunch of patents in it.
Yeah. Doug Bowman was at Virginia Tech. He was on sabbatical. He's the director of the University Center for Human-Computer Interaction. You know what? I could easily see them doing other stuff besides VR and AR with them.
Can you imagine, Leo, in the Apple driverless car, they can make you think, like, you're on your way to work, it's a highway, but outside all you see is Provence or Venice or something.
How about this? Better yet, they just stay in the driveway and they make you think you're at work.
What if at one point, like, you suddenly snap awake and you're in this tub of goo with this hose in your neck?
You took the blue pill. I told you not to take the blue pill.
When you think about AR from a car perspective, I mean, imagine being able to go to a tourist site, let's say like Gettysburg.
Oh, there's lots.
And have them drive you around Gettysburg, and as you look out the windows, you see things that would have happened overlaid and
they'd
more information.
They'd be crazy
and all
not
these
to
other
be working
things,
on
and
this.
There's an incredible.
I mean, yeah, Microsoft is, Google is.
And again, given that it takes years and years and years to figure, get your head around it, again, this is another one of the things they can spend $100 million a year.
They need to.
Figuring it out. They have to.
If they didn't, I would say they were, you know, in violation of their fiduciary duty.
Yep.
It's super interesting because everybody can use a phone, but with VR, you have people who are claustrophobic who won't like it, and you have people who can't focus and converge without getting vertigo in the same plane. Right. But also, from a Facebook point of view, for example, on a desktop, you can just close your Facebook browser. On a phone, you can just close the Facebook app. When it's sitting on your head, they have a much more immersive, hard-to-leave experience.
You just rip the helmet off, as I've done many times.
Companies are going to fight for that because attention, like, Facebook has shown clearly that what they want is attention. They bought Instagram, they bought WhatsApp, because that threatened Facebook attention. And now if you have a virtual world, companies are going to want control of that virtual world.
The biggest question that I'm getting that these engineers are asking, at least the ones that I've been talking to, is really they're trying to figure out that whatever we build today is definitely not the thing that we're trying to build. It's only the thing that we can see right now because it's the logical next step. Think about 15 years ago, what someone would imagine a mobile phone would look like right now. They would figure that, well, they must have figured, they'll definitely figure out a way to put a full-sized keyboard in there, and they'll definitely figure out a way to put in a printer, not a full-size printer, of course, but something so that you could print, like, out a ticket. They would not have figured out the idea that maybe the screen will be so high resolution and there'll be a way of encoding visual information so densely that you could actually have a secure 2D barcode that you could that would represent your ticket. All that sort of stuff was unimaginable, and that's exactly the sort of thinking that when people at a certain high level are working on this, they're saying that Oculus Cinema is a really good idea. The idea of an immersive game or an augmented reality experience where you look around and we're annotating things is a good experience. But that's only the stuff that we can think about because we grew up with games and we grew up right. with Google searches. So it's going to be nothing like that. As a matter of fact, I would be surprised if anybody who is in college right now is even going to be capable of writing those apps. It's going to be people who are taking their first coding course in junior high or sixth grade right now that's going to crack it.
Well, and I think that what's interesting is that, you know, when my kids said, oh, we never use email, we just text, you know, and then they use message apps and everything else. And I was like, that's crazy. You know, that's, you know, like, I don't even know that they'll get around to it. And, yeah, I'm really annoyed by every email now. Like, I'm used to,
we use Slack internally. Yeah, I wish Redis Labs had texted me. I would have responded.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing is like, and people say, well, what's the best way to get a hold of you? And I'm like, they emailed me that. And I was like, not email. You know,
what did you used to have a voicemail message?
Yeah, this, it's still my voicemail message. It just says, hi, this is Alex. If you're getting this message, don't leave a message. I'm not going to check it. I don't even know how.
You know, why don't you say go to email.
Go now to my email.
Don't go to email either.
Yeah. But I'm afraid to tell them to text it because I don't want them to actually.
Well, that's the problem. The whole problem with email is that too many people can do it. Texting works because it's a smaller, it's a subset.
Well, and like what I like about messengers is I can control it. Like what I don't like is text. I hate text now because I don't want random people to have my phone number. So I want something in between.
People message me at Telegram because I've given out my Telegram handle.
Right.
And it's manageable still.
Yeah.
But if everybody started doing that, it would be more unmanageable than email. At least with email, I've developed a lot of filtering and capabilities that I will never get in a message.
But what I like
Slack has taken up a lot of my email.
It's
group-based. Slack, because especially for work email, it's just the entire company uses Slack, so no one sends those emails anymore, and it's delightful.
Yes, but I make the point that that's because it's a constrained subset of your total universe of people who want to reach you.
Yeah.
And if everybody who wanted to reach you just stopped using email and used Slack, it would be more unmanageable, I think, than your email client.
Plus the scale,
which has
right? Like messaging is the most intimate. Slack is bigger because it has more management tools and you can have bigger groups.
You still need email.
I don't say you don't need it. I don't need it. I just don't like it. It's kind of
everybody hates it because it's unmanageable. Yeah. But it's better than the alternatives for.
I don't hate it. At least for a large part of my business, I like the idea that the implication of email is that I'm going to sit down and I'm going to think and I'm going to write something that really makes sense in and of itself, even if it takes two paragraphs to get my point across.
Right.
You might be able to get a little dingus that says Andy Iannotko is typing. But you will get a response within the next hour or the next day that is considered. I wouldn't call it a negotiation. There's a film I'm going to be involved in, and we're trying to get a certain site for it. And it would have been really, really hard to do this if we're doing it in chat or even if we're doing it in Slack where it's like one sentence or one phrase at a time. Sure. It would really have – email – was really going to be the best way to do it. I hope that it never go. I'm glad that there's such a wide variety of ways to communicate. Slack is really, again, for teams, it's the only, really the only way to fly. But I would hate it if email went away because, again, I like that there's one venue where it's expected that you are not going to respond instantly and you're not going to make it just half a sentence with no uppercase. You're going to actually try to tell a story with a beginning and a middle and an end, even if it's, I'm sorry, I have an infected foot.
And I think
I can't climb those stairs, but the salve is working handsomely, and I expect to be able to.
Why would I get an email like that?
Well, I think that the thing what's interesting is that we have so many choices for modes now, you know, and we're still misusing them at times. You know, I think that video, for instance, video chat, whether it's Hangout or Skype or whatever, I think is great. as long as you have something to show, but do not put me in a video chat while we're just talking. Like, I don't want to do that at all. That's like that. Now I have to unitask, and you can always tell if I'm video chatting because I'm really irritated and want to get out of the get out as fast as possible. And if you get me on a phone and I'm not, you know, if you let me be on the phone, I'll be cleaning my desk or something like that, and I'll talk to you for hours. But so I find that phone is really good for trying to figure something out. Like, okay, we have to figure something out, then we have to kind of just test a bunch of stuff and go through it all. Once we want to identify what we actually have to get done, then email turns out for me to be the best way to do that. We're going to have a series of question and answers, and everyone's going to put an entire line under every question. Damn it. You know, like I hate it when people give me like six questions in a paragraph, because now I have to hit space and then hit return and then go to the next one and hit return so I can, you know, break it all down. Then when we're just discussing stuff, when you're asking if you're going to make a meeting, I do not want an email that someone asks me, hey, I don't want emails that say, are we going to make it at 7 o'clock? That's a text. That's like a text world.
So I got this email with a link to crashsafari.com. Should I click that link?
No.
No.
Don't come on.
Okay, do it. Do it.
Should I?
Go for it.
Don't click it on anything. Just, yeah, no, it's a
job. Is it only on iOS?
Show my screen. Which screen? Should I hit here? Let's go here. Crashsafari.com. Let's see. It's probably gone by. Oh, oh wow.
That was awesome.
That not only crashed Safari, it's crashed Springboard.
It turned your logo sideways.
It can do one of three.
Oh, my God.
So that was a respring. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated because basically what it's doing is it's using JavaScript to overwhelm the history events in the browser. It will do different things. For example, Safari, it might just crash the app, so you'll just be dumped back to Springboard. Right. It might crash Springboard, and then Springboard will respawn. Or sometimes it might crash the device. I've had it freeze Chrome. Some people have had it do nasty things in an Explorer, though I couldn't duplicate that.
Oh, so it does stuff in Chrome, too. It's not just Safari.
Well, it's just trying to spring processes. Chrome so far is just beachballed for me, and then I just stopped it, and it worked
fine. You could probably
again.
Close that tab, because they do, I think Chrome sandboxes tabs.
Yeah, Safari does, too, but it's specifically designed. This one, I think, is specifically designed to target Safari.
Wow.
Apple is
Let me try it in Chrome. I'm in Chrome right now. Let's see. Crash Safari. Oh, look at that. Did you see that go across this doing something here. It's spinning.
Yeah.
But I think
it's running a JavaScript over and over and over again. It's basically doing it. It's almost like an internal denial of.
Yeah, but if I close that tab. Yeah, I can't.
You can't because it's going so fast that you can't.
Again, the results vary depending on the state of the machine.
I just can't close that tab.
Yeah.
Reload or close tab. Nope, still there. It hasn't crashed it yet.
No.
Oh.
But it renders it super annoying.
It's starting to crash it. It's the beginning of the crashing.
So it's like a slow death on the
Mac. What do we do, Renee?
So it's a couple things. So first, Apple is aware of it, and they're looking into a fix. So hopefully that'll be sent out soon. In the meantime, you treat it like you would a phishing attack. You just don't click on those links.
Right.
If you get people are trying to prank people by disguising the links. Yeah. So on OS X, hover over the link so it's expanded to the full link and you can see it. On iOS, just long press, so touch your finger on the link and wait for it to pop up the full URL so that you can see what it is. And try to avoid URL shorteners because you never know what's lurking behind those, especially with redirects. So treat it exactly like you would a phishing attack.
I force quit Chrome and all as
yes.
well. Yeah. Good to know. I think this, obviously, the person who created the site is not malicious, so that he wouldn't have named it Crash
They're
Safari. They're showing, they're demonstrating a flaw.
Right. Yeah, it's like a Rickroll of nastiness.
It's like a nasty Rickroll. That is a really, that's a Rickroll with teeth.
We're going to give you a Rickroll with teeth. I like it.
Strangers to crashing. Your Mac is buggy, but so am I.
Let's take a break. You want to do picks, folks? You ready for some picks of the week?
Oh, yeah.
Love it. I got one. There's known knowns and there's unknown knowns. There's knowns we don't know and there's knowns we know.
Oh, you've been doing a lot of Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the Rumsfeld
report last night, too.
It's good. Staying by. But first, a word from LegalZoom. LegalZoom is great. We set up a new LLC. Use LegalZoom. They say, it's so nice. They send you a kit and all the forms you need. It turns out a lot of legal work that you might want to do doesn't require a lawyer. It's just forms, dumb forms. You can save so much money by just doing the forms yourself and not spending $250 an hour, $350 an hour. Lawyers cost a lot of money, you know, by the hour. They really add up.
They do.
They.
As a lawyer's son, I can say.
Yeah, you know.
They cost a lot of money.
They cost a lot of money. Get your life organized with LegalZoom if you've been putting off a will.
You should do that. Living Trust. You can do that all with LegalZoom. LegalZoom's estate plan bundles eliminate the guesswork. And by the way, they do have a legal plan with pre-negotiated flat rates with independent lawyers. So if you have a question, you can talk to an independent attorney in most states. So you can decide, well, is a will better a living trust? LegalZoom's awesome. It's not a law firm, so you can count on efficiency and value. Everything is on your terms, on your schedule. You'll know what your estate plan bundle costs up front instead of worrying about hourly rates. It really takes away a big impediment to doing some things that you really should do, especially that will or that trust. That's how LegalZoom's become the leader in helping small business owners like us and families with their legal needs. You get legal help and you walk away feeling great. We've been really happy. I've used LegalZoom a lot now for all sorts of stuff. And I've never had a problem. It's always been great. Get your life organized with an estate plan bundle at LegalZoom.com today. And do me a favor, put MBW, short for Mac Break Weekly, in the referral box at checkout. That'll get you $10 off, and that'll let them know you heard it right here. That's LegalZoom.com, and the offer code is MBW. I showed this yesterday on iOS Today, but it's so good, and it kept me up so late, I couldn't stop playing it, that I thought I'd show it also as a pick of the week. Donald, this was the weird thing. I thought it was an Onion article. Former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, the guy who said there are no unknown knowns and known knowns and knowns we don't know. And then he was the Secretary of Defense during the first, the second Afghan war. He was under George W., right? I can't remember. Anyway, apparently, when he was a member of Congress, a statesman from Belgium or somewhere.
He had an ambassadorship, I think.
Oh, is that it? He had an ambassador.
So he had an ambassadorship, and another ambassador showed it to them and told him that this is the way Rumsfeld liked, or this is the way
Churchill
liked played solitaire.
He said, it was taught to me by Churchill, and I'm going to teach it to you, Donald. So really, this is like you're getting it from the horse's mouth. And you know what? It is the best solitaire I've ever played, and I'm not a solitaire fan.
Yep.
But I thought this was really good. It's called Churchill Solitaire. It's free, but you only get 200 random hands if you play free, and then you'll pay $4.99. You get unlimited random hands. You can also pay, if you wish, for undos and hints. I wouldn't. What makes it interesting is it's a traditional kind of solitaire board, except for a couple of things.
More.
First of all, it's two decks.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it a lot harder. And then there's this, what they call the devil's pile. There's six cards randomly chosen, and those six cards never go on the board. They all go up here. Of course, your goal is to sort the cards into all because it's two decks, eight suits. And so they can only get in here. And if you don't get the devil's pile, you can't win the game, even if you cleared the board, which makes it devilishly hard. It's really nice, as you can see on the iPad. Mm-hmm. They take advantage of the real estate. I think they've done a good job. There's a lot of Churchill stuff in it, which is kind of hysterical.
Yeah. It's great.
We will fight them on the beaches. We will fight them on the solitaire.
I thought it was silly when it first came out, but it looks really cool.
But solitaire itself.
You get to there are a few settings. I like the big cards, but you could choose the regular size cards. I'm going to use a Winston Churchill card back.
Never give up.
Never. You might want to turn off the music because it goes on and it's martial, of course, Donald Rumsfeld.
It should give you Churchill's martini mix. To drink while
I would guess that being drunk while you play this would make it even more fun.
And you know that that's the way he played it.
Yeah. I think that's the way he played everything.
And naked in the pub.
Yeah. So here's the music. You know, it's very martial.
Yep.
At the beginning, there's a video of Churchill and stuff. It's kind of fun. They have a campaign, which is good. You know, I really like it because you can choose how hard you want it to be. So they're non-random deals.
Right.
And by the way, choose easy. Have some fun. it's kind of funny. The music is a little over the top.
That's hard to focus. Yeah.
Yeah, but you eliminate the music right away. But it is, I'm not a big solitaire fan, and yet I found this quite the compelling game. So you could play it for free. That probably 200 hands. That'd probably be enough. They give you the tutorial, makes it very easy. Here's the Devil's Six. They can only go to the Victory Rows. And you've played solitaire. You know you alternate black and white. You can't ask for hints. That wouldn't be
Hopefully we can hear you over the...
Should I turn the music off? It's really ridiculous. It's really silly. Here's the good news.
Do you play press the whole time? Does it play the whole time like that?
Wow. Yeah.
That would be really...
You just turn it off.
A little vodka a Red Bull and this, and you'd be in some other world.
Dum-dum-dum-dum. The other nice thing is you can stop, and it will save your position on the board. So it's you know what?
It's good. It's well made.
It's very well made. I don't know really how much Donald Rumsfeld had to do with it. I don't even know why his name is on it, frankly.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was talking to someone like, I got this, you know, there's a thing yeah, I still haven't found yeah. on the iPad. And
yeah. Why doesn't anybody have Churchill Solitaire?
He was talking about it last night in the Colbert Show.
Oh, was he?
And he was saying that to his knowledge, like, he was taught the game by someone who worked with Churchill.
Right.
And he was, and to his knowledge, there are only like a couple other people that ever knew this game.
Right.
So it's not as though this...
I've never seen it.
Let's say the story he told, which needs to be verified by an independent UN party, is that this was not like a known game of solitaire.
This is the yellow cake of solitaire stories.
Exactly.
But you know, at this point, it's fine. I don't care. And you know what? It is a really fun solitaire game.
I have to admit, I want to play it with the regular cards, too. Like, there's something about...
You could. I mean, there's no reason now that you know the rules. And the rules are very simple. Right. You could just get two decks of cards and play it.
The interesting thing, Leo, for me, I played it last night forever.
Yeah.
Is when it's you totally go to the addictive. Deck, it's not like a normal game where you just deal out three cards. It goes to every stack.
Oh, that's another thing that's different. Yeah. Any stack that isn't topped by a king gets a new card. So, man, that can screw you up big time. Oh, you have to really, you really want to kind of manage. You don't want to go to the deck if you can help
like
it.
Like Tetris.
Yeah, but it's fun for that reason. I must have set this pretty easy because I'm actually doing surprisingly well for a man of my limited intelligence. But it's a lot of fun, I have to say. So that's my pick, Churchill Solitaire. Yes, you're putting money in the pocket of a war criminal.
No, you're not. He said he's put all his income, if he gets any income, he says going to charity.
Good. And I was being facetious. I don't care.
Well, he was a little bit cagey about that. He was very
unknown.
He used earnings call language.
Oh, dear.
With Colbert, saying that I can't quote him exactly, but it was along the lines of a significant portion of the profits from this are going to.
You know what? I don't care.
I just don't think he said 100%, but. Of all the games, game apps by accused war criminals, I mean, this is
the best.
It's much better than Pol Pot Pinball, I'll tell you that.
And we have a title.
Andy, your pick of the week.
This is a great one, and Renee's going to love this one, I think. I often travel with this because I like taking pictures, and sometimes I also have to do like Skype calls. And this is just a... not terribly expensive, like LED battery panel. So I use it a lot, like when I'm taking pictures, like I want to like put some fill light on something, even when I'm just taking pictures with my phone like this. It's really quite handy and useful. The problem is, of course, it's really, really big, and I won't take it with me unless I really know I'm going to want to use it. Instead, like when I'm doing a chat, I'll just, you know, like Renee has to do, just find a window. But there is a really cool, like little pocket video light that was just released. It was Kickstarter 2 years ago, but now it's commercially available, called the Loom Cube. And I've been using it throughout this entire show, as a matter of fact, as a fill light. It's a little tiny inch and a half cube that 1500K light. Not just what made a casing is made out of. I'll take it off the mount in a sec to show it to you. But first, I want to show you the app. It has buttons. You can operate it as a standalone, but you can also download an app for the iPhone or for Android and control it completely remotely. So I can take the light all the way down. I can take it all the way up. I can turn on red eye. I can also take pictures with it, and it will use it as off-camera light. It can even go into a strobe mode. The other really swell thing is that if you've got it, if you've got more than one, if you have actually two or three or four of them, you can actually use this one app to control each one of these individually. So you can just basically set these up on stands or a little like wraparound GorillaPod sort of lights and just place them around. And then as you're about to take a picture, just basically adjust the lighting of each one of these individually until you're getting the image that you want. The battery works great. Again, it has been running for the past like hour and a half since about 10 past 2, and the battery is still at, and here's, you can give the battery level, the battery is still at 60%. The amount of light it throws off is just insane. I was outside in the backyard at night, and just seeing how far it go, like firing upward into the trees, and all I can tell you is that I heard a distant squawk and then I smelled burnt feathers. That's how bright the light is. But here, I'm going to take it off. It's going to be pretty hot, so I'm going to try not to.
And I was going to tell you earlier while you were when we just got started, I was going to say, Andy, you look marvelous.
You do look good. I told him it looked like he had a really good shave, but it was the light. More important than anything.
The light shave. Yeah.
Just in case. I'm going to take it off the. I'm going to hold it because it's been on for like 2 hours, and it's a there's such cool warning lights, warning symbols on it when you take it off. It says, "Now look, do not look at the light when you turn." You're going to take it out of the box, and you're going to want to push buttons. But I swear, do not. Actually, it's not that bad. I can actually hold it, even though it's been at near high intensity. So it does have its own.
Oh, it's so tiny.
Tripod mount. Exactly. It's just this. It's just this small.
Wow.
And as I said, it has two buttons at the very top here, so that here's this button that will actually just give you a pop of flash, and here is the light that will turn on, and you can adjust it up to 10 levels. At 10, it's just insanity.
LEDs. Is there nothing they can't do?
It is rechargeable. Let me turn it off. There you go.
Awesome.
There's, as a matter of fact, the only connector is on the back here. This protects a micro USB charging thing. It takes about an hour and a half to charge up. Of course, you can take out that plug with just a coin or a washer. And it's fully gasketed. It's not just weatherproof. It is actually submersible all the way down to 100 feet. So if you want to shoot underwater with it, you can shoot underwater with it. They're selling it for basically all kinds of mobile applications. For instance, you can on the site, you can buy a rig so that you can have two of these like on a little strap with a GoPro in the middle. So obviously you can take it diving with you and shoot it underwater as an action cam. Like I said, it was I knew it would be wrong to actually ask for a loaner of this, because as a guy who travels with one of these, who am I kidding? I'm just really excited to hopefully see that this will actually be something I would want to own. And I took it out shooting yesterday, only locally, not like the big bamboo shot. And it was exactly what I wanted it to be. I posted some pictures of just some stuff that I was posting on Instagram, of just like, here's a button that I just put on my bag. And again, you can either take a crappy photo with your phone, or you can just turn this on, get a little bit of distance, instead of having it shooting right directly from the camera lens, get a little bit of positions from an angle. And not only are you getting great light, but it's also from an angle. So it looks really, really beautiful. So this is going to live inside my bag, and it's never coming out because it's just so useful. The only bad things I will say about it, not bad, but sort of qualms, the light is neutral. I think it's something like 6,000, I think. 6,500, whatever daylight balanced neutral light is, which means that if you're taking pictures, like if you're taking selfies, and this works really good for selfies, especially group selfies, you can actually kind of see it here a little bit, where it's neutral light. It's not really flattering light for skin. It will come out looking a little bit cold, but that's A, pretty easy to fix. And B, if that's really a problem, you can just buy an orange filter or orange gel. They don't make them, but it's easier to find, and put it over it and just adjust it that way. Also, the lighting, it's not the advantage of something like this is that the source of light is a big, wide source. It's almost like it's in its own softbox. This is, I think it's four LEDs inside behind a sort of lens, but still it's very direct and it's a little bit harsh. So as a matter of fact, I'm thinking of getting a second one so that if I really did want to do like good lighting in the field, I could have one as my key light here, but then another one a little bit less bright as a fill right here that would soften some of those shadows. Well, but really, really happy with it.
Could
it
you
is
just
79.
I'll cover it with some
well, there's
cheesecloth.
So Andy and I traded a couple emails about this cube, and I didn't have one
And, I'm going to have one in about a week.
Mine arrives. mine arrives today. Today, later when I get home, after talking to Andy, I was like, I'm going to get
for
one.
$80.
So I got
that's
two
awesome.
Of them. Yep. The other thing is,
you can get these in stores as well.
They make little soft boxes, not for these, but for flashes. And so what I'm going to play with is taking one of those little flash ones, the flash softbox, and put two of them next to each other in the center of where the flash would normally insert, and then taping them in and turning them on. I think that then I'll get a nice little, you know, there's a lot of power going into this little softbox, and I think it'll actually be really
actually,
nice.
You can even go simpler than that. I've been experimenting a lot. I'm sorry I didn't bring things with me, but even something like here is the cap off of a juice bottle that's nearby. You just put that over it and go like that, and that will actually soften the light and diffuse it pretty well. You ever buy those like Rubbermaid collection of storage containers, and they got like all the big useful ones, but they give you these two tiny ones that are just only good for a little bit of sauce.
Right.
Turns out that that's the perfect size for this. And because it's plastic, that's translucent but not transparent. That also diffuses it a little bit. And it's because it's about the right size for this, I can actually put it inside it, put the lid on it, and it'll protect like the lens from getting scratched. But like I said, another mode that I forgot to mention, it does also have a sensor right here. I don't know if you can see it, this little dot right there. That's actually a light sensor, so that if you're using a camera with an actual strobe flash, you can actually put it in slave mode so that it will actually just pop some, it'll actually be used as a slave flash triggered by whatever other flash you do.
Can you slave it to the iPhone?
I have not gotten it to work with the
it
iPhone.
It has an app, right?
Right.
It was Bluetooth pairing. Cool, I was wondering if it would like be a flash when you took the iPhone picture. Cool.
No, well, actually, that wouldn't necessarily be important because you can always put this in continuous
turn it
mode
on,
like
that.
But also, it will not. No, I will say
it's
that it doesn't.
Better anyway, right?
It doesn't work as an accessory to the Apple Camera app. Obviously, you're going to have to use like the app that they give you for it. As your phone app, if you're going to use it as a triggered flash.
Oh, so it will do triggering that way, though.
Exactly. It will trigger via Bluetooth that way. And again, as a regular, like 1, 2, 3, go like this, because if you're using any other app like the built-in app, you're going to have to use this in like steady mode. And it might be kind of hard on your, if you have to make sure that you're not like, okay, wait a minute. I need to launch the app. Hang on. Keep looking inside the light. Hang on.
And so Andy, do you tape this to the selfie stick, or do you tape the iPhone to the selfie stick and then the flash to the iPhone?
I was actually thinking about that thing. Oh my God, am I contemplating getting a selfie stick?
You need two selfie sticks because you don't want the flash too close.
The flash,
right? You need a selfie stick to do it like that.
You need a selfie stick with a Y.
Not just that, but like sometimes you want like something to be on over the thing you're photographing, or you want to get the right sort of angle for it.
The whole problem with on-camera flash is it's too close to the camera.
The ultimate selfie stick.
Yeah,
but next week.
But it's great stuff. Like I said, I mean, it's exactly the sort of solution I like, where you buy it and you keep it inside your bag, and then for the rest of the year, whenever you're encountering a problem, damn it, I can't. Oh, wait a minute, I have a solution in the form of this. I did this actually with my headlamp light that I usually wear when I'm walking, because I was at that Metropolitan Opera thing, and they're mostly elderly people there, and they didn't bring the house lights up like after it ended, and a lot of these people with like canes and walkers were trying to make their way like up the aisles in pitch darkness. So I like a chivalrous like young sport of 40 something, I was like there with holding my helmet lamp like this so that they can actually like see their way without braining themselves. So now you're going to have like the basic Star Trek The Next Generation away team flashlight wherever you go, because again, this is intensely, insanely bright. So again, exactly. I'm really
Alex
happy
is
with
checking
it.
His tracking.
Mine showed up. It showed up at noon.
It's at the office.
When I get back. And of course, Andy, I was looking at it like the only thing I wish is they would interlock horizontally, because if the two work, I think that 8 or 10 of them, like all in a big square,
like
behind
a choo-choo train.
You're not wrong, and I was looking at this myself. Like these are. I'm glad that they didn't make this too fancy or complicated, because I bet that I could 3D print like sort of like an egg carton sort of thing,
or like Lego.
Just bungee cord them together.
I made something that looked very much like this when I was a kid, and but what I did is I put interlocking, you know, like basically like a V. V slides, you know, so that you could slide one into the other.
Yeah,
and so and you can connect them all like that, except mine fired things.
And see, Renee, I'm sure, I mean, Alex, I'm sure you've got a bunch of these filters, samples from.
They're all perfect size cuts.
The samples will work. You're totally right.
You could use filter samples
from Roscoe.
Oh, my God.
You can just get, you can just go, so you can go to any, so in any big city, you can go to a expendable store and they'll give you those samples.
So in, there's like five or six of them in New York and there's a couple in San Francisco and there's like 1,000 in LA. So if you're in one of those, you can just go get the sample and the sample will totally work. That's such a great idea.
Okay, so now I know what I'm doing next time I'm in New York.
They have them in Boston. Just search expendables in Boston. You'll find them.
LoomCube, LoomECube, LoomCube.com. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So this is an app that I just saw this morning. I was having breakfast with a friend of mine, and he was using this app, and it is, I'm blanking on the name. I just installed it. It is called
Streaks. Uh-oh.
Streaks, yeah, absolutely. So Streaks is a to-do app that has, it's a little bit different. So what it isn't like you make a list of things and you go through and do them. It's designed to help you learn good habits. Yes. So for example, you might have a digital scale and you want to make sure you weigh yourself every morning. And it's smart, so it won't just say weigh yourself at 7 o'clock. It'll learn that you typically weigh yourself before 8. So when it gets to like 8:10, if you haven't confirmed it, it'll send you a little nudge saying, have you done this yet? And then you can say, oh, no, I'll go do it now. Or you can sleep it for a few minutes because you're going to get to it in a few minutes. Or you can dismiss it. But it's really great for anything. Like if you're practicing the piano, you want to make sure you put in your 10 minutes of practice time a day. It wants you to sort of do to-dos that are reoccurring and that you tell it that you've done them. And then it'll prompt you to make sure you get them done. And it has a really, really cool watch implementation if you happen to wear an Apple Watch. First, for the health and fitness stuff, it syncs with the health app, means that data is everywhere.
So you don't have to enter in the data again.
No, not at all. And also, it'll do it on the watch too. But for example, it has a little complication on it that just shows dots. And once you get used to which order your dots are in, you'll quickly see which tasks you've got accomplished already for the day. And it just fits in one of those little compact size classes for the watch complications. Then you can just glance and go, yeah, I know that one is my weight in the morning. I know this one is the piano. I haven't had the healthy meal yet, though, so I got to make sure when I go for lunch, I can check that one off the list. And it's got all sorts of – the built-in stuff includes walk or run, workout, stand, burn active calories, record weight, eat a healthy meal, walk the dog. But also there's like take a photo, practice the guitar, brush your teeth if you want to teach kids good habits, for example. And you can make your own. You just type in exactly what you want, and you can pick from a whole bunch of different icons for it. And then you just set it up. And it's super cool because tasks sometimes give you options for repetition, but they're mostly based on like action items, on getting things done. And this is really optimized for building good habits. And the human brain is funny. Like you do something once, you'll forget about it. It takes, you know, seven times to start remembering it. Many, many more than that to really make it a habit because you've got to destroy malignant neuropathways, build good ones, and then make sure that they're established. And I started using it just today. I'm eager to see how it works, but I've been looking for something like this for a long time, so I'm super happy to have it.
And you can add your own streaks. Like I'm going to add record blood sugar because I have to test that regularly. That's nice. Yeah.
And it's
$3.99. Well worth it.
So the biggest challenge I have going forward, Leo, is they're once again adjusting prices in the Canadian App Store. So I'm going to say like $24, and you'll look at me like I'm crazy. You'll say it's $4, and I'll be all embarrassed about it. But I think it was $6 Canadian for me.
Yeah. Wow. You got ripped off. Wow.
I think our dollar's at 69 cents or something now and plummeting, so we'll see.
This is good. And another good reason to use an Apple Watch, I gotta say.
And the health thing is great. The permissions are still hard to manage because Apple is super granular. They made read and write a separate thing to maintain your privacy if you want. And again, that's because just because you're recording your blood sugar level doesn't mean you want your insurance company to know that you're recording your blood sugar level. So you can share without them even knowing that exists. So it doesn't even leak information that's something that you are doing. But once you set it up once, then it's on your phone, it's on your watch, it's in the app. And if you eventually switch to another app, all that information is still there. It's not locked in the silo of any particular app.
It's called Streak, but they should have called it Nudge.
Yeah. Yeah, Nag. iNag.
Nag.
Yeah.
I'm sure they considered iNag.
Why aren't you not doing that? Why aren't you
going to buy that?
You should take your weight already, Leo. Just go on the scale. Why don't you?
I'm adding sleep. You should sleep more. I think this is an important thing.
Think about that.
Yeah. Sleep 8 hours.
I can't.
Yeah.
I'm not even capable of that.
Really?
I'm a progression of my father. My father sleeps no more than 4 hours a night. Like he can't. Like he cannot. Like it's a.
That's
issue.
Awesome. Is he, as long as he's not sleepy.
No, he's not sleepy. Well, at 9 o'clock, he drops.
What I found out that's awesome is when I'm on the West Coast, I go to bed on Pacific time and I wake up on Eastern time, and then I feel normal. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting no sleep.
My dad's like the old school. Like, he literally sleeps for a couple hours, and then in the middle of the night he gets up, and there's like a couple hours of him doing stuff, and he goes back to bed for a little while, and then he gets up. And I guess that's the way they used to be before electricity.
Well, European siesta culture, right?
I'm going to add take a photo every day. That would be a good one.
I'm trying to take a 360 every day.
Yeah.
Some people do journal entries every day. Some people want to practice an instrument.
Journal. That's a good idea. Nice. Streak, it's called. Yep. And it may cost you more in Canada.
Seven countries.
$700. No. Alex Lindsay.
So I think I've been pretty good recently about not doing expensive ones, but I got a little more expensive.
Spend us some money.
So
I bought everything so far. Everybody's recommended. So
well, this one
you may break my streak.
There we go. Yeah. So this is the Behringer XR18. Now they have an XR12, XR16, XR18. Depending on what you need, you could spend less and everything else. I think this is in the $600 range. So if you've ever wanted to have like a mixer. But you figured, why do I need all this hardware? I could just run it on my iPad. Well, yes, you can. Now, Mackie came out with one. Mackie was like the first one to do this.
He used Mackie for years.
And that was cute. It was cute. Yeah. But this is a real mixer that is, there is no artifice of like, we're going to put something in there to make it look old or whatever. It is just like, it's a rack mount and you can just plug everything into it. You've got six aux outs. You've got, in this case, 18 ins.
What's the antenna for?
Because it's Wi-Fi, so what you can do with that Wi-Fi, of course, is open up your iPad.
You can control it,
and
with
you
your
run
iPad?
Everything with your iPad. Now, the great thing is that can be a little scary. Like, what if you're in a big event and you don't want to run that? It actually, you can still hook it up to Ethernet and still log into it with the Behringer app. When we have a lot of Behringer Midas boards,
Behringer
and stuff like that.
Has not always been this great sound to make quality.
Fun. So here's the deal. We used to make fun of Behringer, and it was kind of like
it's kind of a crap. It was inexpensive, but not
inexpensive
great.
And not great at all. Not even great, not good. In fact, horrible.
Okay,
you know, so we would never buy a Behringer until. So then they bought Midas. Now Midas have the best preamps in the world.
Oh.
So they bought Midas, and with that, now there's some Midas boards. We have a bunch of Midas boards, and then there's Behringer boards, and the Midas boards are pretty much interchangeable, except for the fact that they both have the Midas preamps. The Midas boards have a little bit more in them, and so we've got a bunch of those. But the big thing here is that they also added what's called now they say it's based on Dan Dugan's auto mixing. It's not the Dan Dugan auto mixer, because that was a big, I think, a legal
it's
issue.
Based on.
So Dan Dugan is this kind of genius that created this auto mixing. So if you have three people sitting around or six people sitting around a table, what it does is it intelligently goes, that person's talking.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to gate everybody. I'm just going to push all the other mics down. And if you look at, you know, it is like we don't do an event with multiple mics without a Dugan mix somewhere in the thing. So
it's fast enough when somebody starts talking, it picks it up.
Well, and it does it softly. It does it naturally. So you're not doing this mix up and down.
Yeah.
It just softly keeps all of the volume the same when one person starts to talk.
18 mic channels. You can do a massive event. We should buy one of these. Wait a minute, though.
Yeah,
expensive.
This is like $600 or $700. It's not
for a mixer, that's cheap, really.
No, it's cheap. Most of our mixers are $3,000 and above. Yeah. So this is a great – this is my personal mixer. So that's what I'd say is that we have a lot of mixers
in the
office.
Can I carry it in my purse? Because that's really my new criterion.
No, you can't.
I can take the Loom Cube in my purse.
You can put it in a Rush 24 if nothing else was in there. You know, but it's you know, you can see the size. It's big. Yeah. It's like this big.
It's a mixer. It's actually a rack mount mixer.
But if you're, you know, if you're looking for the – this is, again, this is my personal – the one that I'm using – going to be using on my own, in my own little studio in my house.
Look at that.
And, we've got,
that is really cool.
It's super nifty. I mean, when you think back on all the days that we,
boy, this would have been so great 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Would have changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nifty.
Wow.
You know, and Marty Brennus, who works with us at the office was, you know, he's got one, he uses it on shows all the time. I think he's got, the 18, but there's also smaller ones. So if you think that's too much. And you can get the cool thing is, I think the 12 is even 1U. I mean, they get smaller.
Yeah, because really, you don't want a podcast with 18 people.
But you might have. The thing to remember, though, is a lot of times you have. Well, what if we have other audio?
What do we take on the
road
now for our stuff? Do we have anything like this? We have. We still have the analog Mackie.
Yeah.
And we can't really work with analog anymore. Like, we do so much stuff in ours, whether it's compression, the auto mix. Like, you're not going to get an auto mix with a analog. And once you get used to an auto mix, you cannot go back. You know, we had to make a choice recently between the auto mix and a Cedar noise removal, and we went with the auto mix because it made a bigger difference. And so, because there's so much phasing that goes on between mics and stuff, not like this, because these mics are so, have such good off-axis rejection. But anyway, it's a little geeky, but
I would have killed to have this in the day. It's cool. Back in the day when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's cool.
I still have kind of a fetish for audio stuff. I probably shouldn't.
I do. It's a very expensive fetish.
It's a bad habit.
I won't recommend the other one that we think is really cool, which was the. Well, I will recommend it, but I will not say that everyone should have one. We bought a Cedar DNS-8, which is above what I'd recommend because it starts to get into a cheap car, but it just removes all the echo and all the noise around you, and it's.
Ooh, it's expensive. This $700 Amazon Prime.
And that's a 16. Now there's 12.
I could get a 12, which would be like $250.
Yeah, $250 for
that. Is that the same?
It's the same interface. It's just less inputs, less outputs.
Well, looks like four mic inputs.
Yeah, four mic inputs. That'd so it's be a enough. Little short. And then there's also
we
a 16.
Need more than four. How often do I hear that? Don't buy anything, Leo. But I want the Dugan style auto mixing. It's revolutionary.
It is.
And I've bought everything so far on the show. Every pick.
You can have it.
I could go 100%.
But there's a 16. Look at the XR16.
It's only $215 bucks.
Look at the XR16.
The 16 is better because
it's between the two. So if the 12 doesn't have quite enough mic inputs, like for.
Oh, this is only $400 for the 16.
And now you have, I think.
How many is that? Oh, look at that. That's eight. No. Yeah, eight.
Eight mic inputs there.
And then aux inputs. And then could you mix a band with this?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is what we need when we have live studio, don't we?
Absolutely.
So why did you say don't get it? Because you want to get it.
Amazon Prime, right? We can buy it a week before we need it.
It is Amazon Prime, $400. Yeah. But now we could get used to it, and I could play with it at home.
It's great.
Sold. All right. I've now bought everything you guys picked, so stop it. Knock it off.
What, you want a bicycle, Leo?
I already have a Trek. Thank you very much. Andy Iannotko. He's with the Chicago Sun-Times and CWOB.com, and he's the greatest.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you here once again with that beautiful light. That's just a single loom cube.
It's two, isn't it? Or is it one?
Walk towards the light.
Is it one
All
or two, Andy?
You're welcome. This is just one. I saw a picture of the prototype that they showed off
for a GoPro
during the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And that light had actually four elements inside it.
Nice.
It's $1,500K. So that's a lot of light from one LED. But yeah, this is just one of them, and you can get them in gangs. Yeah.
Very nice. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. We got you off just in time. The email should be going out any minute now for the press release.
Yep.
I have a Telegram bot. It's the Apple PR bot.
Nice.
It's so awesome. I get a Telegram message on my messenger whenever Apple issues a PR release.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's actually pretty cool.
So a Telegram?
Telegram, we've talked about Telegram. This. So it's called Apple PR Bot, and you just follow it at Apple PR Bot.
I have to get better at bots. The guys write bots for Slack all the time in the company, and I don't quite understand it, but it's great.
Bots are great.
Yeah.
Really are great. That's Alex Lindsay. He's from the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com. And next week we'll talk about what Apple announced. That's just how we'll have to do it because we can't stick around all day. We got a show to do. Security Now is coming up next. Thanks for being here, everybody. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Now that the site's back up, you can watch live there. Remember, your backup site is always live.twit.tv. Just a little hint, a word to the wise. We kept the old live stream up just in case, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah.
Glad we did. You can also subscribe. That's a good way to get it. And now on the Apple TV and the podcast app or anywhere you get podcatchers.
Stitcher, Slacker, Spotify. Spotify just added video. I have had it for a while, but apparently some people are just getting it now.
They're making it more prominent.
Yeah, and it's good. Watch, please, every week, and that way you won't miss a minute. Thanks for joining us. Now, get back to work, because you know what? Break time?
Bye-bye.